I would like to welcome you all to this annual briefing by the African Regional Economic Communities to Member States of the United Nations, organized jointly by the Office of the Special Advisor on Africa and the UNDP and under the leadership of the Assistant Administrator and Director for UNDP RBA, Regional Bureau for Africa, and with the permanent mission of the African Union, represented by Ambassador Tete Antonio, the permanent observer mission. The theme for this year's discussion is the role of Africa's regional economic communities in consolidating peace, security, governance, and development in the context of Agenda 2063. This session will be divided into four parts. The first part will be a keynote addressed by His Excellency Mr. Jan Eliasson, the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations, whom we thank him for being with us today and for opening this important meeting. The second part will be introductory remarks by myself and by Ambassador Tete Antonio of the African Union, head of the African Union Observer Mission. The third session will be remarks by the heads and the representatives of CINSAD, ICAS, EAC, ECOWAS, SADC, IGAD, and COMESA, followed by a session of questions and answers. And the last session is going to be moderated by Mr. Abdullahi Mar Diaye, and it's going to be a presentation by the Special Representative of the Secretary General to the African Union and the head of UNWA, the Special Envoy of the United Nations Secretary General for the Great Lakes region, and the Special Representative of the Secretary General for the Central Africa and head of UNOCA, and then followed by another session of Q&A. I would like at the outset to welcome the presence of many ambassadors and high United Nations officials in this briefing that shows a lot of importance to be attached to African issues, particularly at this time while the African Union is working on the Agenda 2063 and the United Nations is working on the post-2015 development agenda with all aspects that are associated with our work at the intergovernmental level, at the regional and the international level. Without further ado, I would like to go to session one, and I don't think that Mr. Jan Eliasson, the Deputy Secretary General, needs introduction. He's a man of passion and compassion for Africa. He has served in many African countries throughout a long career in diplomacy till he became the foreign minister of his country. He has been posted as Special Representative of Secretary General in Sudan, Darfur, along with Mr. Salim Ahmed Salim, along and many others. And he has been the first Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs. And he is the right man at the right time because he is also supervising this, the preparatory process for the post-2015 development agenda with all what that is carrying through and the linkages that are that are between this preparatory process and our work in the Office of the Special Advisor and with the African Union and the regional economic communities and our representation on the ground. Deputy Secretary General, we are all ears.
Thank you very much, Chair and Special Advisor on Africa, Maged Abdelaziz. Ambassador Tete Antonio, Excellencies, colleagues of the UN family, ladies and gentlemen, and dear friends, I would say. I see so many friends with whom I've served on the barricades in different parts of Africa and in the world, and I'm very glad to be part of this meeting. And I, of course, first of all, want to welcome all the high-level representatives of the African regional economic communities present here today, and also our several special representatives of the Secretary General from different parts of the African continent. I'm honored to speak to you today. It is no exaggeration to say, I think we could all agree, that we meet at a turbulent, but at the same time dynamic time at the United Nations. This past week has been full of activity, with a strong focus on Africa, ranging from peacekeeping and humanitarian crisis to the very serious Ebola epidemic. I am pleased today that we have taken time at this gathering to discuss development and the long-term future of the continent in the light of the African Union's visionary Agenda 2063. Africa has for long and consistently been a top priority for the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the entire United Nations system. We applaud Africa's remarkable progress. Economic growth is impressive. More African children go to school than ever before. There are great advances on women's empowerment and gender equality. Participatory governance and well-functioning institutions are on the rise. All this has been possible thanks to the leadership and commitment of African governments, the African Union, the regional economic communities, and many other partners. The United Nations is one such partner, not least through the Economic Commission for Africa. We always stand with Africa in solidarity and close cooperation. We all know that we have serious work ahead of us. Mr. Chairman and Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, regional economic communities have shown their unwavering resolve to promote interregional trade as well as social and economic cooperation. You have always demonstrated an increasing capacity to deal with the root causes of conflict in your respective regions. There are many examples of progress. The economic community of West African states helped to consolidate peace in Mali and the Sahel region. The economic community of Central African states is playing a mediating role in the ongoing crisis in Central African Republic. I know that my colleague Sajinit has worked very closely with you and colleagues on issues related to other situations in West Africa. I also welcome efforts by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, to resolve the situation in South Sudan. The Southern African Development Community, SADC, is working with the International Conference on the Great Lakes region to implement the Peace and Security Cooperation Framework for the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Great Lakes region. It's quite a good record. The Secretary General has convened a number of high-level meetings over the past week relating to Africa. Many of you have attended them. We have seen progress towards some of our common goals, but crises on the continent still threaten lives and undermine development, as we all know. The Ebola virus disease presents new and very serious challenges in West Africa. I commend the efforts of ECOWAS and the African Union in quickly mobilizing resources and awareness to reduce the impact of Ebola. And as you know, the United Nations has mobilized to a degree rarely seen in the history of the organization. Our special envoy on the United Nations mission for Ebola emergency response, UNMIR, are working hard to stop the outbreak, treat the infected, provide essential services, preserve stability and prevent the spread of disease, and of course in close cooperation with the governments and the countries affected and regional organizations. The affected nations and the international community have a joint responsibility to contain and stop the epidemic urgently. The affected countries have a right to expect concrete and immediate acts of solidarity. The humanitarian and security situation in the Central African Republic and South Sudan remain dire. Northern Nigeria and Somalia continue to face rising terrorist threats from Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab. The political situation in Libya is growing more complex and dangerous. Lesotho is facing a risky political stalemate. All these situations have potential spillover effects on sub-regions and the continent. Let us remember that development is both a cause and a consequence of peace. There has been great social and economic progress across Africa, as I already indicated earlier, but as in the rest of the world, its economies have not kept pace with legitimate demands. Above all, we need more jobs. more employment, especially for Africa's young people. And as you know, unemployment is not only an economic challenge, it is also a social, political, and psychological problem. Trade among African countries remains limited, mainly because they do not have adequate railways, roads, and other infrastructure. Many African economies also lack sufficient economic diversification, productivity, and well-functioning institutions. And I think these are matters, Mr. Chairman, which are related to the work that we have ahead of us when we decide on later next year the transformational agenda for the post-2015 development period. Trade among... As a result of these problems, even though African countries have impressive growth, Africa is still off track to meeting many of the MDGs. And we will have continued work to do on the MDGs that we are not achieving by the end of next year. And poverty eradication will still be the number one objective of the work ahead of the period 2015 to 2030. We are here today at this important meeting to consider how we can do more to reduce poverty and inequalities, how we can improve food and water security, and how we can enable more African mothers and children to live healthy lives. Women's empowerment is especially important to advancing progress for all. We can unleash enormous energy and gains across Africa if we end discrimination and violence against women and girls and invest in their future as leaders in all areas of society. Mr. Chairman, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, Agenda 2063 offers a way forward for Africa with key regional objectives. The regional economic communities can make the difference between failure and success. Agenda 2063 has a global dimension that must be harmonized with international development trends, particularly the post-2015 agenda. I congratulate my African friends on the common African position on the post-2015 development agenda. As the negotiations continue, we will work to ensure that the continent's concerns are appropriately reflected in the next global development agenda. The transformative changes envisaged in Agenda 2063 will need to be forged around stronger regional integration. I think there is a tremendous power and potential in intensified regional cooperation and sub-regional cooperation, particularly if you think about the landlocked countries, how much they could gain from stronger regional cooperation to compensate the disadvantages of being landlocked. The process should also be underpinned by major investments in human development, in science, technology, and infrastructure. All this will, to a great deal, depend on effective governance and on durable peace and security in all parts of the continent. So we come back to the old formula that was established in 2005. I was proud to be President of the General Assembly at the time. The formula that you have heard so many times, but it needs to be recalled all the time. There is no peace without development. And there is no development without peace. And none of the above without respect of human rights and the rule of law. Mr. Chairman, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, this meeting provides an opportunity for you as regional economic communities to tell us how you are contributing to Agenda 23 and how the United Nations can better support your efforts. We are partners. I also look forward to hearing from our special envoys and special representatives on how the United Nations system can enhance its cooperation with the regional economic communities and, of course, the member states. Working together, we can demonstrate that the international community accepts shared responsibility for Africa and African development. Working hand in hand with Africa will also benefit the world at large. It is in the enlightened self-interest of all member states to increase this cooperation, by this advancing common global goals for peace, development, human rights, and, in fact, basically human dignity. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Secretary General, for these inspiring and comprehensive remarks for this meeting. And I think that we will take everything that you have just said into consideration during our work today and forward on this important topic. You made my task very easy in making an introductory remarks, so I will limit my introductory remarks for a few points that I will make, and then to be followed by introductory remarks by our partners, Assistant Secretary General and Director of UNDP Regional Bureau of Africa, Abdoulaye Mar Ndiaye, and Ambassador Tete Antonio of the African Union. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the annual REX briefing was initiated by the Office of the Special Advisor on Africa in collaboration with the Permanent Observer Mission of the African Union to the United Nations to create a platform for direct engagement and interactions between the REX and the international community, particularly the United Nations system. This was in recognition of the fact that, though increasingly integral to the work of both United Nations and the African Union in the areas of peace, security, socioeconomic development, and regional integration, the REX do not have a regular platform at the United Nations headquarters to showcase their work. As such, we are often not fully privy to the enormous and crucial contributions the REX make to our shared goal to maintain international peace and security and achieve international cooperation in solving global economic, social, cultural, and humanitarian problems. These annual briefings by the REX contribute to filling this gap. It raises global awareness on the work of REX, including their achievements and challenges in the areas of peace and development, foster peer learning among the REX, and creates opportunities for the REX to build and strengthen partnerships with the international community and particularly with the United Nations. Over the last 4 years, the briefings have focused on various thematic issues, including on building resilience and capacity of African countries, regional and sub-regional institutions to preempt and respond to humanitarian crises and disease. This year, we focus on the role of the REX in consolidating peace, security, governance, and development in the context of Agenda 2063, the African Union forthcoming 50-year structural transformation plan. And I must say that there are copies of the Agenda 2063 on the side of the table for those who did not manage to get a copy. The rationale for focusing this year's briefing on Agenda 2063 is in line with decision of the African Union Assembly to popularize and solicit further inputs to Agenda 2063. In this regard, the findings on the recommendations from this meeting would be shared with the African Union for consideration and potential incorporation in the final document to be adopted at the next summit of the AU in January 2015. It will also be shared with the UN Interdepartmental Task Force on African Affairs to ensure coherence and an integrated approach for United Nations system support to the REX in implementing the agenda. In addition, it will constitute a core of the advocacy and operational support OSA and UNDP continue to provide to the AU, NEPAD, and to the REX. Ladies and gentlemen, Agenda 2063 embodies a renewed commitment by Africa's political leadership to achieving the pan-African vision of an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa, driven by its own citizens and representing a dynamic force in the global arena. Pending the adoption of the official version of the Agenda 2063, the popular version of the agenda outlines that this Africa we want can only be attained with the critical role of the REX as the building blocks for continental unity and integration. The integration implied in Agenda 2063 is not limited to the traditional focus of the REX on regional economic integration. Rather, it is an emphatic and amplified call to focus on the nexus between peace, security, and development, reaffirming that regional integration and cooperation are key strategies for achieving inclusive, robust, and sustainable economic growth that will enable the continent to overcome its daunting development challenges, including poverty, conflict and wars, radicalization and diseases such as the recent public health emergencies arising from the Ebola outbreak, as was rightly mentioned by the Deputy Secretary General. In this regard, the minimum integration program, the consensual framework between member states, the AUC, and the RECs for accelerating the process of regional and continental integration, include a set of people-centered priorities that straddles various sectors, including economic, social, and political affairs, trade and industry, peace and security, governance, infrastructure and energy, agriculture, science and technology, and human resources development. As these are all vital components of Agenda 2063, the RECs will be central to the effective implementation of all aspects of the agenda, in particular its first 10-year action plan, which will coincide with the post-2015 Global Development Agenda and other milestones contained in the strategic frameworks of both the African Union Commission and NIPAD for the 2014-2017. This calls for urgent programmatic action by both the AU and the RECs to accelerate the harmonization of their existing instruments as to enhance regional cooperation in three broad areas. The first is in combating threats to peace and security, including terrorism, climate change, and disease, as well as in silencing the guns, the recent AU initiative to end all wars by 2020. The second is an improving good political, economic, and corporate governance, as well as human rights and rule of law. The third is in promoting people-centered socio-economic development, including through targeted investment in the empowerment of women and youth. The strategic support and partnership of the international community, particularly the United Nations system, will be critical to the AU and the RECs as they move towards implementing the Agenda 2063. My office is committed to embarking on this journey with the AU and the RECs and will intensify its advocacy at the global level to mobilize support for the effective implementation of the agenda. Let me conclude by stating that today's meeting, which focuses on the RECs, is the first step in this regard. From 13th to 17th of October, my office and its UN and AU partners will be organizing series of related events on Agenda 2063 as well, within the context of the Africa Week 2014, which we organize, an event that we organize every year for a week time, culminating by the general debate in the General Assembly on Africa, and which will focus on the overarching continental thrust of the agenda. I take the opportunity to invite you all to also participate in the Africa Week 2014, which will inter alia include another high-level panel that will discuss the African perspective for peace and security, development, governance, and human rights. With these introductory remarks, I would like to hand over the floor to my co-organizer, Assistant Secretary General Abdoulaye Mar Diaye, the Assistant Administrator and Director of UNDP's Regional Bureau for Africa.
Thank you, Maged. Mr. Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations, Excellencies, Permanent Representatives to the United Nations, His Excellency Ambassador Tete Antonio, Permanent Observer of the African Union to the UN, Mr. Maged Abdelaziz, Undersecretary General and Special Advisors on Africa, distinguished heads and representatives of African economic communities, special envoy representatives of the Secretary General, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. I am honored to participate in this briefing of the African Regional Economic Communities, the RECs, to the member state of the United Nations. This event is co-organized with the Permanent Observer Mission of the African Union Commission, the Office of the Special Advisor on Africa, and the United Nations Development Programme. Let me begin by thanking His Excellency Ambassador Tete Antonio and his office in facilitating this event together with OSA and UNDP. His committed leadership has contributed immensely to the steadily growing collaboration between OSA, UNDP, and the African Union. I want to specifically recognize Maged's passion for Africa's development and the cohesive and inclusive way he is leading us all in the UN system for a continuous advocacy to ensure that Africa's voices are heard on global development issues. Let me also congratulate the African RECs for the important results attained in the advancement of the continental agenda and for the implementation of their own regional mechanism at the same time while operating in challenging and constantly changing contexts. And it is with appreciation that I would like to recognize the efforts that are being made between the AUC and the RECs to bring coherence in their work and in the harmonization of the continental and regional frameworks, instruments, and mechanisms in order to remove structural obstacles to development. I would like to salute the seminal works of the UN envoys and special representatives in deepening the partnership between the UN and the RECs and in facilitating coherence and harmonization among RECs and between RECs and AU, particularly on the peace, security, and development agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, this year's theme, the role of Africa's regional economic communities in consolidating peace, security, governance, and development in the context of Agenda 2063, is quite timely. The common African position on the post-2015 development and the Open Working Group report rightly emphasize the critical role of peace and security in accelerating development. Peace, security, and development are the inseparable dimension of the same nexus. Peace and security are a powerful engine for economic growth, prosperity, and higher standards of living. And without development, security cannot prevail and peace cannot be sustained. The software that makes them happen is good governance, and most specifically, strong, stable, and resilient institutions at subnational, national, subregional, and global levels. Our meeting today should have been a moment to celebrate the impressive achievements of Africa since the beginning of the 21st century, after two lost development decades. But the recent Ebola virus outbreak in West Africa, which is seriously eroding hard-fought and much-deserved peace dividends and development gains, is a sad reminder that investing in strong and resilient institutions is an inevitable down payment for irreversible peace, security, and development. And we cannot but admire and strongly welcome the unanimous resolve of the international community under the drive of the United Nations to tackle this insidious challenge head on. Ladies and gentlemen, Ebola virus is not the only challenge facing the continent. There is a full range of challenges and priorities we collectively need to address in the governance, peace, consolidation, and security and development areas. First, addressing the downward spiraling and interconnected vortex of conflicts, fragility, and extreme poverty still needs utmost priority and continuous attention. Here, too, it will be critical to keep building strong institutions and cohesive national social contracts to ensure that human development and human security progress steadily and without reversals. Second, and to reach the aspiration of Agenda 2063, Africa must leapfrog to a higher development plateau, and this can only be achieved through structural economic transformation. Our meeting today provides a very good opportunity for RECs, member states, and partners to brainstorm on how to effectively contribute to the articulation of the main aspirations of Agenda 2063 and how to meaningfully translate the vision into concrete human development and human security outcomes. It is our strong belief that the RECs are the linchpin in this process. they are the optimal locus to address externalities in conflicts, which goes beyond national territories, and the much required structural investment, such as energy and infrastructure, to generate the economies of scale which are sine qua non condition for accelerated development. The challenge before us today is how to empower the WECs, which are the building blocks of the African Economic Community, to fulfill that mandate, especially in the context of Africa where they coexist with some 14 intergovernmental organizations working on the same issues of regional integration and cooperation. Ladies and gentlemen, the UNDP Africa Regional Program offers a platform for a strong partnership with AUC and the WECs, as the program is focused on sustainable development, inclusive growth, democratic governance, and resilience. These three pillars are in full congruence with the agenda of the AUC and the WECs, which we have now made full members of our regional advisory board. In conclusion, let me again underscore the availability and engagement of the UNDP Regional Bureau for Africa to accompany the WECs and the AUC for the efficient implementation of Agenda 2063, which, building on the Pan-African spirit of the Lagos Plan of Action, constitutes the new narrative to address African developmental challenges in a holistic manner. With a renewed sense of commitment, we all must continue our efforts to further strengthen the global partnership for the operationalization of this agenda. Through these efforts, we will translate the Pan-African vision and aspiration into concrete development outcomes. Et je voudrais ici finir en remerciant.
And I'd like to end here by thanking the Deputy Secretary General for having come to the meeting and for having given us his inspiration and explaining and showing us the importance that the DSG himself attaches to Agenda 2063. Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear friend Abdullahi, for these remarks. And we always value and cherish the excellent cooperation between OSA and the UNDP in these events and in forwarding and moving ahead the agenda of Africa. There can be no better culmination of this session, too, than hearing opening remarks from His Excellency Mr. Tete Antonio, the permanent observer of the African Union to the United Nations. Excellency, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Excellency Deputy Secretary General Yann Eliasson, je suis tenté de vous saluer aussi en français.
I'm also tempted to welcome you in French. I know that you have a particular love for French, and I'm an example of this.
A distinguished head and representatives of the RECs, excellencies, ambassadors, members of the African group and representatives, special representatives and special envoys. As you understand, we are particularly delighted to have you here today. If you look at the room today, the way it's full after the general debate of the General Assembly, we know how difficult it is to have a gathering just after the General Assembly. This just demonstrates how Africa is still in the heart of many of our friends. So we thank you all, especially having people from the RECs who are directly linked with their work on the ground, our colleagues, special envoys and representatives in Addis Ababa, in the Great Lakes, and Central Africa who are here, people who have served in Africa. I particularly recognize the presence also of President Ramos Horta, who has done a very good job He was trying to hide himself behind there, but we saw you, President, and we thank you very much for the work you have done in Guinea-Bissau. Mm-hmm. So let me thank you, particularly USG Majid, for Under Secretary General and Special Advisor on Africa, for facilitating this annual briefing by African regional economic communities and for the impetus we have given to the African issues in the family of the United Nations. I wish to also extend our deepest appreciation to Mr. Abdoulaye Mar Dieye, Assistant Administrator and Director for UNDP's Regional Bureau for Africa, for the continued technical support to our common endeavors. In the same vein, I wish to thank the representative of the regional economic communities for taking time off their busy schedule to bring to bear their respective perspectives into our discussions today. The task before me today is to provide an outline of the African Union's Agenda 2063 and focus on how best to set the stage for translating into reality Africa's collective aspirations and enshrined in its Agenda 2063. In this juncture, allow me first to point out that the Agenda 2063 is still evolving as the deadline for final approval by the AU policy organs has been extended to January 2015 in order to allow member states time to internalize and take ownership of the agenda. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, in conceptualizing Africa's Agenda 2063, African leaders were determined that the Africa take its destiny into its own hands. Agenda 2063 is also conceptualized as a general framework to accelerate the implementation of key continental frameworks and fast-tracking of Africa's integration agenda. Agenda 2063 is based on the following seven aspirations, which Majid also made reference to, but as they say, repetition is the mother of science. So the first aspiration is a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development. Second, an integrated continent politically united and based on the ideals of the Pan-Africanism and the vision of Africa's Renaissance. Then comes an Africa of good governance, democracy, respect for human rights, justice, and the rule of law, which Mar described as being the software. And then comes a peaceful and more secure Africa, an Africa with a strong cultural identity, common heritage, values, and ethics. An Africa where development is people-driven, unleashing the potential of its women and youth. Africa as a strong, united, and influential global player and partner. Those are the seven aspirations. The Agenda 2063 aspirations are further supported by a set of 18 goals, ranging from attaining of among others high standard of living, well-educated citizens, transformed economies and jobs, entrenched democratic values, practices, universal principles of human rights, justice, and the rule of law, fully entrenched Pan-Africanism, Africa as a major partner in global affairs, and peaceful coexistence, and Africa no longer aid dependent, and takes full responsibility for financing her development. Undeniably, these aspirations, however lofty, cannot be achieved without creating an enabling environment underpinned by strong institutions, regional infrastructure, and a peaceful, secure, and stable Africa. The centrality and importance of Africa's regional economic communities as building blocks for integration, economic transformation, and infrastructural development has been given prominence in Africa's Agenda 2063. Ladies and gentlemen, the effective implementation of the Agenda 2063 needs to take into account and adapt to both threats and opportunities as well as the ever-changing global context. As already foreseen in the agenda, the threats facing the continent include the following: the scramble for Africa's resources, external influence in the affairs of the continent, the ever-increasing scale of illicit outflows of Africa's resources and capital, conflict, instability, and insecurity, social and economic inequalities, transnational organized crime, mismanagement of diversity, failure of harness the demographic dividend, escalation of Africa's disease burden, climate risk and natural disasters, external shocks. One of the critical enabling factors to achieving the development goals and fulfilling the aspirations of African citizens is ending conflicts and obtaining peace and security. To this end, the AU has elaborated the African peace and security architecture. The APSA consists of five pillars, namely the Peace and Security Council, the Continental Early Warning System, the African Standby Force, the Panel of the Wise, and the Peace Fund, as well as the MAU between the AU and the Regional Mechanism for Peace and Security. Other elements of the APSA, including integrated border management, security sector reform, disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration, arms management and control, including small arms and light weapons, landmines and nuclear weapons, counterterrorism, maritime safety and security, post-conflict reconstruction and development, women, gender, peace and security, and the relations between the AU and the UN in the area of peace and security. In the area of curbing conflict, instability and insecurity, some of the regional mechanisms have made significant progress in the operationalization. I think this word should become, we should find another one, exactly, of the APSA, including in the establishment of the RSF regional forces, while others have made far less progress, largely because of instability within those regions. Progress in the operationalization of the main APSA capability areas has increased in tempo over the past few years and being matched by an increasing assertiveness by the AU and number of the sub-regional organizations in response to the African crisis and most conflict situations. This has most recently been illustrated by the response to the crisis in Mali, in SAR, as well as the response some of the regs such as ECOWAS in Mali, ECA in SAR, ECAS in SAR, IGAD in South Sudan, and SADC in Madagascar. However, the experience in Mali also underlines the current limitations of the AU and the RM in the area of peace and security, as the lack of readiness of the African standby force and the inability to deploy with sufficient speed was a factor in the deployment of the UN and other bilateral partners in the conflict. These experiences have also underlined the need to situate the African peace and security architecture within the global context linked to the global peace and security architecture, namely the UN and its Security Council. In the context of the Agenda 2063, stakeholders' relationship framework, the role of the 8 officially recognized regional economic communities have been clearly defined, with their key functions as being the following: representing the region on Agenda 2063 Operational Steering Committee, adapting, aligning continental long, medium-term Agenda 2063 perspective plans, guidelines to regional plans, issuing regional 2063 10-year perspective plan guidelines to member states, coordinating the preparation and execution of regional projects, programs as per Agenda 2063, leading in the mobilization of resources to implement regional projects and programs, providing leadership in the regional national consultative process with respect to the preparation of Agenda 2063, providing input to the deliberations of the Operational Steering Committee on monitoring and evaluation, coordinating the setting of targets, milestone for Regional Agenda 2063 programs, coordinating, integrating member states, monitoring and evaluating report for presentation to Operational Steering Committee, preparing monitoring reports on regional programs and Agenda 2063, conducting evaluation of regional component of Agenda 2063, program implementation. Ladies and gentlemen, I will be reminded of me to conclude without making underscoring the need to address escalation of Africa's disease burden, especially in the face of the ongoing menace of the Ebola virus, wreaking havoc in West Africa, taking toll on the already fragile state of economies of the affected nations, as well as their post-war weak infrastructure and health systems. The outbreak of the disease has also put the aspiration of the regional integration under immense strain. The AU must face the challenges posed by such new threats, which the continent, and indeed the world, has never before had to confront. The recent global commitment and response demonstrated by the international community on the margins of the General Assembly debate of the 26th session brought to fore what the African Agenda 2063 foresaw as a two-dimensional approach to overcome risks and addressing fragilities, notably building the capacities of the RECs to find regional solutions to address drivers of fragility. Second, building interlocking partnerships and institutions. Finally, it is our expectation that today's briefings and discussions will set the stage for more regular exchange and interaction on how together we can deliver on the call to action outlined in the Africa's 2063 agenda. I thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Tete Antonio, for this comprehensive exposé, and also thank you for alerting us to the presence of His Excellency Mr. José Ramos Horta, the Nobel Peace Prize winner and the former head of the State of Timor-Leste and SRSG for Guinea-Bissau. Mr. President, you are invited to sit in the front row if you wish to do so. We would like... I like your humble approach, but officially, I think you should be seated with us in the first row. The Deputy Secretary General will have to leave for a pressing engagement, but within the interactive structure of our discussion, he would like to make a few remarks on what we have said so far. So, Deputy Secretary General, please.
D'abord, je veux remercier...
Well, I'd like to begin by thanking my friends... Tete Antonio and Mr. Die for having addressed me in French. I'd like to stress the role of the French language in Africa.
I think we should consider another word for operationalization. I was thinking you could talk about making it operational. That's easier. But I would go even further and say, how do we make a difference on the ground for the people? In the realities, that's what it's all about. So, thank you. And also, I want to pay tribute to President Ramos Horta. We know each other since you received the Nobel Prize in our neighboring country and you came to Stockholm. And I've admired your work in Guinea-Bissau. And also, I want to, when I see President Ramos Horta, I was thinking also of the contribution of Timor-Leste to the Ebola crisis. Timor-Leste donated $2 million at the Ebola meeting. And to me, this is one of the best signs of solidarity. we must never forget that this is a universal organization. When one of our friends, one of our nations are in trouble, we should all feel that we are in trouble. And I think this gesture of Timor-Leste, of giving that support to Ebola, was so important. And it was particularly appreciated, I know, by the three most affected countries when we saw that contribution. Also, I want to recognize another colleague, Haile Mankerios. We have worked on the barricades, and several of them, and we have always discussed this issue of relationship, peace, development, and human rights, how they are connected. We've seen it in Sudan and South Sudan, of course, where you are very active. But I also would say that there is another relationship that I think we should really think about. You all know the Charter, of course. I have it here. To remind you that Chapter 8 is a part of the UN Charter. These fantastic authors of this charter wrote about regional arrangements before they actually existed in a large part of the world. It was only the Arab League and the Latin American OAS that I think existed at the time. Many of the other organizations were not organized to the extent that they are now, but these founders wrote about regional cooperation as part of the UN Charter. And that says also something very important, that there must never be a contradiction between regional cooperation and global cooperation. The African Union's work on the post-2015 development agenda is absolutely crucial, but I'm sure that our African friends understand that this also has to be part of the global structures that we are building next year, and this year, and next year. So I think that we see this interrelationship between peace, development, and human rights and rule of law, importance of strong institutions, I would particularly underline. But also that we see the relationship between local, national, regional, and international. If these goals that you decide member states next year are meaningful in the deepest sense of that word, it means that they have to be meaningful both on the global, regional, national, and local level. Our job is to make sure that these goals are relevant on all these four levels. And I think this meeting, Mr. Chairman, underlines how you want to connect the regional to the global and how I want to connect the global to the regional. So I thank you very much, and good luck with today's meeting.
Chairman. Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Secretary General, for your participation and for the inspiring remarks you've just made. Now, the next session, we will start with the presentations by the regional economic communities. Let me, before giving the floor to the first speaker, say that the seating arrangements prevented us from putting all representatives of the regional economic communities and all the special envoys and SRSGs on the podium. So I apologize for them for sitting in the first row. But of course, all will be given the chance to be participating and contributing to our discussion in this important event. So the first speaker, while the podium is being rearranged, the first speaker is His Excellency Mr. Ibrahim Sani Abani, Executive Secretary of SINSAD. I invite him to speak for 7 minutes, if possible, because we are running a little bit behind schedule, and make concrete remarks that would inspire us, as always. Thank you.
Thank you, Excellency. Thank you for saying 7 minutes, if possible. dear colleague, let me also permit to my brother Francophone to take out their earphone, because I will speak in French. Merci.
Excellencies, ambassadors, permanent representatives of the diplomatic community, His Excellency the Under Secretary General and Special Advisor for the Secretary General of the United Nations, Excellencies, representatives of the African Union and of the regional economic communities, ladies and gentlemen. Allow me, please, to begin by thanking all facilities that have been here, UNDP in particular, which have helped to organize this important meeting in order to create and ensure a solid synergy for another Africa, one which must stop and ensure peace, security, health, education, social and economic development in the context of the MDGs. This is an Africa that should be attractive and not attract clandestine elements. This is a special context for the African continent today, especially for the regional economic community. Africa today is facing multiple crises, shaking its peace, security, and development. We are shaken by conflicts and wars in the West, Center, and East, but also by humanitarian crises. More than 20 million persons are directly threatened by conflicts and humanitarian crises. This creates an environment of social, economic, and political instability on the continent. Economies, societies, even political powers are becoming vulnerable in dealing with these complex events. We thus need to join our efforts to address this. There is inadequate development in these regions, which are shaken by conflict, and their progress and development is highly compromised because there can be no development without security and stability. These crises and conflicts are obliterating all the continent's efforts and make it even more vulnerable to epidemics such as the Ebola virus. Without sustainable peace and stability, Africa cannot tackle these pandemics or tackle these emerging diseases or consequences of climate changes and provide solutions to these wars and displacements of populations. The major challenge facing Africa is to ensure stability, all kinds of stability, political, social, economic, spatial, and cultural stability. That is why the new CENSAD, in its declaration of N'Djamena by the Conference of Heads of State and the revised treaty of February 2013, has emphasized two aspects: promoting peace and security in the Sahel-Saharan region and promoting sustainable development. Ladies and gentlemen, Agenda 2063 of the African Union focuses on the aspirations of our continent and gives a positive outlook to this. Its implementation requires previous strategies. In order to anticipate 2063, we need to resolve some main problems and issues. And I'd like to share with you a few of these to ensure that the regional economic communities can participate in their actions to implement this agenda for the continent. These are general strategic issues that we must urgently address in order to implement Agenda 2063. We must put an end to current conflicts, put an end to terrorism, put an end to transnational organized crime, invest in education by using new technologies, resolve once and for all the energy and electricity issues on the continent, to resolve access to water, address issues for food security, and prohibit land grabbing of agricultural land. To focus on women and young people in the continent and provide them economic opportunities and ensure new information technologies in African rural zones. This is a very important for the future. We need electrification of rural areas and to transform African farming through new know-how and knowledge focused on technology and traditional knowledge, mastery of water resources and irrigation techniques, cultural technology adapted to Africa's context, sustainable management of lands, resources, water, and biodiversity, and especially implementation and development of value chains on the continent. The set of measures will add value and provide stability to African farmers and their families, and provide genuine opportunities for young people and women on the continent, and add value to the rural world and place it at the heart of our future and the global future of the continent. This new interest in farming, livestock raising, and sustainable development will help Africa to move away from its nutritional dependence. We need to have access to water. This is a sine qua non, and this is within reach for the continent if we have a rational management of these resources and sharing of these resources between the different areas in a coordinated way. If I may, I'd like to underscore the crucial issues our continent faces in dealing with security and peace, in particular under Agenda 2063. Africa aspires to be a united and stable continent. We also wish to put an end to making political use of ethnic, religious, and cultural phenomenon dividing Africans in order to build their wealth. Peace means a fair redistribution of national wealth and adequate public services and that are equally distributed. We need the involvement of women and young people, especially in dealing with democracy and the rule of law. With regard to governance in Africa, this is also part of Agenda 2063, and this is crucial. We wish to emphasize Africa's aspiration to having stable borders and to respect the rights of all citizens. The inviolability of borders, to ensure the free movement of persons and goods as under the Abuja Declaration. Ladies and gentlemen, in 2063, more than 70% of African people will be living in cities. This creates major challenges for their management and security. We must prepare our continent in these great cities in order to build their capacity to manage this. I'd like to address climate change. Under Agenda 2063 of the African Union, this is mentioned on page 8 of the agenda, and this calls upon our respective responsibility to take up this challenge. I've been asked to shorten my statement, so if I may, I'd like to conclude my statement by emphasizing some key aspects that my community wishes to have taken into account. We hope that the regional economic communities, which are the pillars of the African Union, can remain key in implementing the Agenda 2063 and the post-2015 development agenda. We hope we can focus on, in particular, on peace and security, stabilization of African countries, and ensure good governance. We hope to contribute to the 2063 agenda by focusing on the Sahel-Saharan region. This matter was adopted at the last meeting of heads of state in N'Djamena. We need to focus on rural populations' access to electricity and farming measures for processing in a context of peace and security. We call upon the United Nations to support this strategy and sectoral programs through coordinated efforts of partners. Lastly, CENSAD hopes that UNDP and other UN agencies can ensure follow-up and implementation of the post-2015 agenda and objectives. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Abani, for this important overview. Actually, I was not asking you to shorten the remarks, but rather to save some of them to the interactive discussion that is going to happen. We want to keep this kind of momentum. My next speaker is Mr. Adolfi Nahayu, who would be speaking on behalf of His Excellency Ambassador Ahmed Alami, the Secretary General of ICAS. Mr. Nahayu, please.
Je vous remercie, Monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Special Advisor for Africa, ladies and gentlemen, heads of delegations, observers, I would like to present the apologies of His Excellency Ambassador Alami, Secretary General of ECAS. At the very last moment, he was prevented from coming here for reasons beyond his control. The progress that ECAS has made over the last 12 months for the 2063 agenda of the African continent, particularly in three areas, priority areas, are notable. These areas are the environment, infrastructure, peace, and security, and they can be summed up, I think, as follows. With regard to the environment, the implementation of the Plan of Action support program for the preservation of the ecosystems in the Congo Basin as part of sustainable biodiversity and adaptation to climate change, the building of ecological multi-purpose centers in the interior of DRC and also in the Virunga, Rwanda, and border areas of the country. Also fighting poaching by nominating a goodwill ambassador. The organization also of the Third Forum on Indigenous Peoples of Central Africa. With regard to infrastructure, with the help of the African Development Bank, several projects are being carried out. Or are in the process of being studied or prepared. The blacktopping of a road between Cameroon and Congo, 678 kilometres. Also another road between Gabon and Congo, building of a railway link between Brazzaville and Kinshasa, and also Kinshasa-Ilebo, that link is being built. In the area of peace and security and governance now, we can quote several specific actions. These are not exhaustive. The setting up of new missions for peace and security in the Central African area, with more human and logistical resources being allocated. The MISCA is made up principally of SEAC contingents. We represent the highest number of troops in that mission. And as part of the implementation of the security strategy, the maritime strategy, we have established the Regional Center for Central Africa, RESMAC, in Congo, and it is going to be inaugurated in the next few days as part of the Owango multi-nation exercise, FOMAC, in Central Africa. Also, FOMAC is fully operational following the training exercises of its forces in Chad in 2007 and then 2010 in Angola, and the next set of exercises will be in the Congo that I just referred to just now. This strategy has inspired the preparation and adoption of the Gulf of Guinea security strategy at the historic Heads of State and Government Conference with ECOWAS that was held in June 2013 in Yaoundé, and also the Interregional Coordination Centre that will be coordinating this strategy that was inaugurated on the 11th of July in Yaoundé. We've also announced the implementation of the Kinshasa Convention for the combating the proliferation and accumulation of small arms and light weapons. Also, the early warning mechanism in Central Africa has been strengthened in terms of personnel and structure, and it is helping to prevent and manage conflicts by producing various products aimed at decision makers. The building of peace and security and stability is the first priority area for us, Chairman, and here the African Union and the Sahara region must agree on these things in Agenda 2063. However, respect for subsidiarity implies that leadership must come from the continent and the United Nations and must be supported by the region but not replace the region. Until such time as the region goes beyond its capacity. And also, the RECs must consistently be supported by the United Nations with regard to security problems that occur in their part of the world. Democracy, good governance, and human rights are areas that, generally speaking, are linked. It's difficult to speak about one without referring to the other, in fact. And here, the African Union and the RECs must harmonise their vision on these issues. And this will have the advantage of avoiding disagreements in certain situations. We recognise that our values are indivisible, but we hope that the specificities of each REC are taken into account in implementation. Special Advisor for Africa, ladies and gentlemen. The issue of incorporating Agenda 2063 and the post-2015 development agenda in the regional programme of ECAS hardly needs to be mentioned because 2063 includes the basic elements of the post-2015 development agenda with the final objective of eliminating food insecurity and poverty and also ensuring social development in the long term. Stress will be placed on systems that are results-based for quality interventions in the area of innovation, sharing of experiences between member states and the Secretary-General of ECAS. In terms of follow-up, we will have follow-up systems established together with our partners, the strategic partners such as the African Development Bank and the Economic Commission for Africa must be on board here, closely associated so that we can benefit from their technical aid in their respective areas of competence. And also the United Nations could help ECAS in organising the agenda for 2063 as well as the post-2015 development agenda by strengthening our capacity to plan and coordinate the various regional projects. Also, the United Nations must support the ECAS to reform itself with regard to reorganising itself on the continent, help it to rationalise its missions, for example, with the Economic and Monetary Commission for Central Africa, CEMAC. And here we would like to thank the African Development Bank for their assistance by providing funding for projects and by strengthening the institutional capacities of the countries of Central Africa that make up ECAS. Special Advisor for Africa, once again, thank you so much for organising this important event. A shared vision will, I'm sure, help us to achieve the post-2015 development agenda goals as well as Agenda 2063 of the African Union. ECAS is fully in line with this vision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nahayo, for this presentation. Next speaker is Mr. Charles Njorog, the Deputy Secretary General for Political Affairs of the EAC, East African Community.
Your Excellencies, Mr. Jan Eriasson, Deputy Secretary General of the UN, Mr. Maged Abdulaziz, Assistant Administrator and Special Advisor on Africa, Mr. Abdoulaye Diaye, Assistant Director of UNDP, Regional Office for Africa, His Excellency Mr. Tele Antonio, the Permanent Observer of the EU to the UN, distinguished ambassadors, representatives of member states and international organizations, colleagues, CEOs of the RECs, ladies and gentlemen, while commemorating the 50th AU anniversary of the AU-OAU, the Africa Heads of State and Government issued a solemn declaration in which they identified 8 key areas for African development agenda, which Ambassador Tele of the AU has referred to. This continued to inform the debate on Africa's Agenda 2063, the call us to action towards attaining Africa's vision of an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa, driven and managed by its own citizens and representing a dynamic force in the international arena. As we chart Africa's trajectory for the next 50 years, at least 5 key areas, key success areas, come into play. First, effective multi-stakeholder people participation in Agenda 2063 from inception, design, implementation, monitoring, and evaluation. Second, fostering Africa Renaissance by nurturing integrationist mindset. Third, adopting result-based approaches. Fourth, harnessing the full potential of African diversity for African development. Fifth, communicating the right message to the people timely and sustainably. The question is, how are we positioning ourselves to make positive contribution to this agenda for change? How do we address the political, socio-economic development challenges, including peace, security, and governance, knowing that these are the prerequisite for any meaningful integration and development? At the last briefing, we briefed the esteemed UN member countries on the East Africa Community Regional Strategy for Peace and Security and the various policy interventions, some under implementations and others we are negotiating. Since then, the additional support provided by partners, especially under the African Peace and Security Architecture Framework, we have registered results in a number of areas, setting the stage for realizing Africa Agenda 2063. We have operationalized the EAC early warning system, established a mediation framework, the EAC panel of eminent persons, carried out security sector reforms through policy and program harmonization of practices in the police and correctional service sector, rolled out measures aimed at combating trafficking in humans in all its aspects, embarked on implementing the East and Southern Africa Indian Ocean Maritime Security Strategy, which fits into the African Integrated Maritime Strategy 2050, and we continue to consolidate the gains made in the small arms and light weapons control through the AU Regional Small Arms and Light Weapons Steering Committee. This is a good foundation for implementing the UN Arms Trade Treaty, the UN Security Council Resolution 1540, and promoting security and stability. We are carrying out intervention for promoting good governance, implemented under 4 governance pillars. These pillars are the protection and promotion of human rights, strengthening the electoral processes, promoting adherence to the rule of law, and access to justice, and promoting accountable leadership with strong institutions of governance that provide checks and balances. We ensure alignment to the AU governance architecture. To move forward Africa Agenda 2063, we recognize the imperative for effective engagement of civil society organizations, the private sector, youth and women, and youth and women. In that regard, in addition to the East Africa Business Council, we have established the East Africa Dialogue Framework for SEOs, private sector, and other interested parties. The EAC Youth Ambassadors Platform is also facilitating realization of youth potentials informed by the EAC Youth Policy we adopted in 2012. To ensure cross-regional exchange of experiences, promote good governance, and enhance complementarity aligned to the continental vision, the EAC continues to nurture collaborative arrangements with other regional economics communities, as well as with organizations having security mandates. This includes the Regional Centers on Small Arms Interpol, the East Africa and South Africa Anti-Money Laundering Group, and the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region. Distinguished Excellencies, these initiatives have not been without challenges, especially those associated with limited resource and technical expertise to implement envisaged initiatives, also those associated with harmonizing different socioeconomic and political governance regimes on the continent and domesticating them at regional levels. Mobility have brought on it, especially soft and hard transport infrastructure, and differing mandates of the RECs in their founding legal instruments, implying variances in the way the integration priorities are set and programs implemented. Going forward, we need to prioritize and focus our energies and efforts and resources on some of the key following areas: fostering greater political will and translating the political commitment in the solemn declaration to action, mobilizing the requisite resources, and promoting collective approaches to peace and security initiative, target capacity development to respond to the rapidly evolving and the new emerging security challenges, implementing flagship programs and projects that are fundamental to promoting regional and continental integration, in particular the infrastructure and trade facilitation projects like those under the tripartite EAC, COMESA, SADC, and the tripartite IGAD, which promote job creation and employment, especially to the youth, facilitating free movement of the people, goods, capital, and services. Our belief is that the gains realized in the four key areas, operationalizing the EAC Common Market Protocol and lessons learned, should be the source of motivation for the move towards attaining the continental free trade area. We also need to come up with the implementation plan for Africa Agenda 2063. Africa will need to boldly delineate roles and responsibilities to facilitate attaining its vision, including identify the drivers. As we do this, we need to expedite adoption and resolute implementation of good governance to enable setting common regional standards and benchmark. Setting our Agenda 2063 is a way of determining our post-2015 development agenda. True that we have registered some success in our MDGs targets, like universal primary education, gender parity at various levels of education, lowering HIV and AIDS prevalence among the youth, increasing access to retrovirals, increasing women participation in the legislative structures. But much more remains to be done. As RECs, we need to do more, especially in terms of mainstreaming the post-2015 development agenda in the agenda of the civil society, parliaments, municipalities, and local government as we elaborate Agenda 2063. Bringing together member states to translate a mainstream of Africa Agenda 2063 into the national development agenda and regional work program with concrete actions and deliverables, harnessing the full potential of the civil society, youth, and the women, whose potential remains untapped as vanguards for Africa Agenda 2063, strengthen partnerships and mobilize resources for the implementation of projects and program and monitoring and evaluation progress, nurturing sustainable ownership of Africa vision by the private sector to become a more significant player in the domestic resource mobilization. As we do this, we certainly need to support the support of the UN and partners. This could come under different portfolios. For instance, this need to support our interventions, targeting institutional strengthening, especially in the areas of socioeconomic and political governance. RECs require support to review their strategic plans to align them to Africa Agenda 2063. This includes scenario planning on the projection for the next 50 years, stakeholders analysis, detailed program development, developing monitoring and evaluation framework, and the implementation plans. This requires special competencies and capacities which the UN and other partners could offer. We need support to enable us to design long-range interventions targeting the youth and the women. The lessons learned, successes from other regions need to be shared and replicated. The UN and partners have carried out many studies, have the comparative advantage on this, and could assist the regional economic organizations. Finally, we need to communicate the message of African integration to the people to promote sustainable ownership of Africa Agenda 2063. To that end, we need to develop a thorough, comprehensive communication strategy for Agenda 2063. Fortunately, the communication function for Africa Peace, Security and Development falls squarely within the mandate of the UN office, among others. May I thank you, Your Excellencies, and your staff for organizing this important forum that brings us together to discuss issues of mutual importance during this session of the UN. I thank you all.
Thank you very much, Mr. Njorge, the Deputy Secretary General for Political Affairs. Before giving the floor to Ms. Salamatu Sulaiman, the Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security in the ECOWAS Commission, I would like to invite the next speakers to be a little bit brief on the promise that we will publish your full statements in our website. And if you can just make the salient points and the points that could be of relevant to the discussion, because we would like to open also to hear views from the floor on what you have said. So we will take care of publishing all the statements, and I would like to ask each and every one of you to provide us with the text of the statement. We will put that on our website for everybody to read in detail and in extenso. But please try to be as brief as possible so that we can follow up with the discussion. Thank you very much. Ms. Suleiman.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, Excellencies, distinguished ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the President of ECOWAS Commission, I would like to speak on ECOWAS and the consolidation of peace, security, governance, and development in the context of Agenda 2063. Agenda 2063, as we all know, is aimed at achieving an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa, driven by its own citizens and representing a dynamic force in the global arena. Two of the key pillars identified at the setting up of the agenda are peace and security and democracy and governance. As has been said by my colleagues earlier, these two pillars are critical to the success of the other six pillars and crucial to the sustainable development of the African continent. ECOWAS activities in governance is underpinned by capacity enhancement for the facilitation of strong, autonomous, and credible governance institutions in member states. And our areas of engagement include national infrastructure for peace, anti-corruption and human rights commissions, parliaments, judiciary, promotion of the ideals of the African peer review, as well as support for patriotic and pragmatic political parties. In the area of peace and security, our engagement is based on the African peace and security architecture, and it focuses essentially on the development and operationalization of the ECOWAS standby force with fully developed civilian and police components, as well as thematic programs on mediation, maritime security, counterterrorism, security sector reform, and the fight against illicit arms and weapons. I will briefly touch on some of the achievements of ECOWAS in the area in line with the context of Agenda 2063. And under democracy and good governance, I would like to highlight the works we have done with the human rights commissions in member states, the work we have done also in helping with elections, with the electoral commissions, giving them technical and financial support, supporting all institutions that work towards credible, free, and fair elections. And recent success stories, of course, include the presidential elections in Mali and Guinea-Bissau. And we are actively engaged in preparing for 5 critical elections coming up next year in Nigeria, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, and Togo. In the area of peace and security, working under the African peace and security architecture. I would like to mention some of the achievements in mediation and conflict prevention. I've already mentioned the cases of Mali and Guinea-Bissau, and engagements have not stopped after the elections. We are still continuing with the political dialogue in Mali to ensure there is sustainable development and in post-electoral reforms in Guinea-Bissau. I want to also mention some of the successes we have achieved, though less celebrated, in the parliamentary elections in Guinea and in Togo. And in Guinea, I want to thank especially the special representative of the Secretary General, His Excellency Said Djinnit, who worked very, very hard with ECOWAS to ensure that those elections were held. Under defense and security sector reform, we have established a regional framework that seeks to professionalize the armed forces and subject them to democratic authorities. In this regard, we specifically have a program in Guinea-Bissau on defense and security sector reform, and it is something that we think has gone a long way towards ensuring stability in that country. In the early warning sector, in line with the APSA, we have developed, our heads of states and government have approved the development of national early warning and response mechanisms in all our member states to strengthen the capacity of member states to detect potential conflicts. And as part of this project, we are facilitating the national infrastructure for peace in all member states. I want to talk about the ECOWAS Standby Force, which is an important part of the African peace and security architecture, and that we have strengthened our components, which is one of the forces to be reckoned with on the continent. And following what we called an after-action review of our operations in Mali, AFISMA, before it was transformed to MINUSMA, we have recognized certain areas that will be critical going forward for reform. And this will be in line with the 2063 African agenda. On regional security, we have strengthened coordination of platforms for intelligence sharing and knowledge and capacity building in the fight against maritime crimes, small arms and light weapons proliferation, as well as terrorism, particularly bearing in mind the current situation in northern Nigeria. And ECOWAS has taken proactive measures that has enhanced the sharing of intelligence between not only the member states, but also other states in other regions that are bordering countries like Nigeria. And the cooperation in this regard with Cameroon and Chad is helping to combat the ongoing Boko Haram insurgency. On gender perspectives, through gender-sensitive mediation and preventive diplomacy activities, capacity enhancement for women in peace-building, advocacy for the promotion of gender mainstreaming in governance and security institutions, as well as financial support to civil society organizations for the promotion of women empowerment. Through this program, ECOWAS seeks to promote the social, economic, and political rights of women and youth. Most importantly, we have come up with what we call the Sahel strategy. This Sahel strategy seeks to link the connection between development and peace and security. That is, realizing that without peace and without development, there can be no peace and security. ECOWAS has specifically targeted its Sahel strategy towards development, and it's geared towards ensuring sustainable peace through development in states along the Sahelo-Saharan belt. Under economic development, we have been building on the existence of stable and secure environment for economic development and have recorded remarkable success in areas like the promotion of free movement and persons. I dare to say that on the African continent, we are one of the RECs that has been able to successfully have members move interstates within the states without requiring any visa. We are making a lot of progress on having a common external tariff and other economic partnership agreements. ECOWAS has also promoted economic infrastructural convergence through the West African Gas Pipeline, West African Power Pool, and the Lagos-Abidjan Transport Corridor. On health and well-being, many speakers before me have already mentioned the current threat that our sub-region is facing in terms of the Ebola virus. We, as ECOWAS, have taken a lot of initiatives to ensure that a lot of support is provided to the countries that are affected, and that policy directives have come out that will help to fight this virus. We have provided support to the West African Health Organization, to member states. We have done sensitization programs, and we're working with development partners and other agencies. We're coming up with robust plans and actions, all under a hub set up in Ghana to ensure that this virus is combated. I want to thank people who have assisted us in this regard. In order to summarize, because the chairman is indicating I should finish, I want to say that ECOWAS will continue to work alongside the principles captured under Agenda 2063. And in this area, we'll provide leadership to member states in aligning with the agenda and putting all their national priorities in accordance with the agenda. We'll carry out sensitization and promotion of the ideals among ECOWAS community citizens, government, business leaders, and investors, as well as development partners. We'll mobilize additional human, financial, and capacity resources to supplement provisioning by other stakeholders, and we'll align the agenda to the strategic and operational plans of the ECOWAS and its member states. We'll also strengthen coordination through the definition of ways and means collaboration and joint planning. For improvement and support, in order to conclude, I would like to mention just a few areas going forward. We want to call for enhanced synergy between the RECs and the AU on operational level implementation. The modus operandi for achieving this needs to be jointly designed and agreed. I think one of my colleagues has mentioned something similar earlier. We want to also talk about breaking the agenda into sub-regional components, with each sub-region working with member states to prioritize activities, mainstreaming peace and security in the six other components of this agenda. We want to also talk about reform of the decision-making organs within the AU, which is imperative to ensure effective implementation of the agenda. This reform should take into account the importance of the RECs as pillars of the AU and give them better voice in the relevant continental institutions. We want to ask for support of the United Nations system in providing technical and capacity to the RECs to enable them deepen their involvement in the implementation of the agenda, as well as facilitating coordination, monitoring, and evaluation. I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Suleiman. Next is Dr. Angelo Mondlan, Director of Policy Planning and Resource Mobilization in SADC, who will speak to us for 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chair, Excellencies, and all protocol observed. I was going to start by saying something which happens in my village, but given time constraint, I'm not going to say that one. As you are all aware, I will try to be as brief as possible. SADC was established as a regional economic community. In its genesis, one of the main priorities was the issues of peace, security, and development. I will try and constrain myself talking now basically on the current developments and try to link them to the Agenda 2063, which is our main issue here. So since its establishment, SADC embarked on a regional economic cooperation and integration agenda comprising several areas, and peace, defense, and security was one of the central issues. SADC has made important achievements in all areas of regional economic integration. The area of peace, defense, and security, as I indicated before, remains a key pillar and a critical enabler of the regional cooperation and integration. Cognizant of this fact, SADC made deliberate decisions to bring this sector to the center of these regional cooperation efforts, and this strategic decision has paid tremendous dividends in the stability of the region. SADC established the organ on politics, defense, and security cooperation, which provides a strong regional framework for consolidation of democracy and an important platform for exchanging best practices in the areas of good governance and democratic practice, such as fair and transparent elections, respect for human rights, and the rule of law. A SADC program of elections in the area of peace, defense, and security has always been coordinated and aligned with those of the African Union and cooperation with the United Nations. This has led the organization to successfully resolve complex political conflicts in our region. Zimbabwe and Madagascar are typical examples of both homogeneous solutions and well-coordinated multilateral efforts led by a regional organization, SADC. SADC, it's also well known that was a key player in bringing stability in the Eastern DRC, and it remains an active member in the implementation of the Framework for Peace, Security, and Cooperation in the Great Lakes region and the DRC. SADC, in close cooperation with the International Conference of the Great Lakes region, the United Nations, and the African Union, will not disarm until full lasting peace and security established in the Eastern DRC. And as a region, SADC, our role in SADC is to ensure that this problem is not forgotten from the international agenda and that commitments are fully implemented in a sustainable manner. The regional economic communities and regional mechanism for conflict prevention serve not only as an advanced listening post for a global early warning and first line of call in case of brewing conflicts, but they are also a guarantee of sustainability of internationally brokered peace. Although the United Nations brokered peace moves from peacemaking to peacekeeping and is post-conflict peace building and development, it's continued through its specialized agencies. The African RECs are and have closer interaction with stakeholders at micro levels and can monitor local changing conditions. The RECs are not only indispensable but are also the overrepresented overseas of compliance. In our view, the recent experience of the United Nations African Union and RECS regional mechanism desk-to-desk meetings held in the last 5 years have proven to be an important hub for building interpersonal partnerships, forge rapport between field officials, and even rationalization of expenditures in conflict resolutions. It was during the last inter-organization dialogue held in Sokobo, Namibia in July 2014 that for the first time SADC played a role of donor when it decided that its voluntary contribution, however small it might have been, was left with the UNDP in Madagascar to assist in the municipal elections in Madagascar. The African Union United Nations RECS desk to desk is an important institutional mechanism for coordination. We fully support and encourage the practice to continue. I'm going to skip saying something on the other key areas of regional cooperation and integration in SADC, but I have to say that SADC is not only working on peace security, it is also working in key areas of regional integration, like trade and economic liberalization, like infrastructure development, like social and human development issues of regional dimension. I'm coming to the end, to the issue of how SADC approaches the Agenda 2063. The declarations and the treaty establishing SADC provide for a statutory link between SADC and the African Union, in which it aligns itself to the objectives of the African Union as enshrined in the Abuja Treaty on Continental Integration and in the Constitutive Act of the African Union. In view of that, in developing its long-term, medium-term strategies and short-term plans, SADC aligns and guides itself through the overall continental policies and strategies. The Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan and the Strategic Plan of the organ were developed under this framework. They are a materialization of continental development strategies at the sub-regional level, which take into account the local dynamics, pertinent realities, and challenges. At all SADC policy organ meetings, in particular Council and Summit, the Secretariat reports on the status of coordination with the African Union Commission and on implementation of continental political and integration agenda. It is in this context that all issues pertaining to consolidating peace, security, governance, and development in the context of Agenda 2063, together with other regional cooperation and integration matters, are handled. SADC has recently reviewed its Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan, and in remaining consistent with its policy principles vis-à-vis the African Union framework, the Agenda 2063 is subsumed in the revised strategies. In conclusion, Chairperson, our views are that consolidating peace, security, and good governance is a critical enabler for successful implementation of Agenda 2063. Two, that Africa's regional economic community have a pivotal role to play in the implementation of the Agenda 2063. Three, that there is need for closer coordination between the African Union Commission and the RECS and member states. Four, that the support strategies and mechanisms of the United Nations system and other key development partners need to be reassessed and realigned to the priorities identified in the Agenda 2063. Finally, that to play their role effectively, the regional economic community need to be urgently capacitated and empowered in line with the repeated decision on the matter by the African Union Assembly of Heads of State and Government. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mondlane, for this presentation. It is now 12 o'clock, and our meeting will have to finish at 1 o'clock. And after consultations with our co-organizers, before giving the floor to the distinguished representative of IGAD, we propose that we will continue with the list of speakers so that you will hear everybody all at once. Continuing with after the representatives of the RECs, we will hear the representatives of the and special and the envoys of the Secretary General, and then we will listen to the views of member states and NGOs. And I have on my list already five speakers, so that's just you to know. I have Spain, Japan, Turkey, Egypt, and New Zealand on my list. Please let my colleague know if you would like to make a contribution to this discussion. Having said that, I would like to urge really our part of the at the podium and our speakers to be brief and bold and to the point. I give now the floor to Mr. Richard Barno, the director of the Conflict Early Warning and Response Mechanism, CEWARN, at IGAD to make his presentation for less than 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Excellency. I had anticipated your cutting off of my time and try to reduce it, but I had reduced it to 5 minutes. So let me see if I can do it in less. So Excellencies, Abdelaziz, Madier, and Teta Antonio, and distinguished Excellencies, first of all, let me start by expressing the apologies of my principal, Engineer Mahbub, who was with us until Monday waiting to take part in this conference, but then was called back to the region and had to leave. So he really asked for your understanding and apologizes for not being here. Secondly, to say that what I'll present, of course, is a brief summary of our presentation, and I will circulate a more comprehensive briefing. So by way of introduction, let me say that IGAD, as one of the building blocks of the African Union, has a vision of creating a prosperous, peaceful region, which is achieved by complementing member states' efforts in peace and security, environmental protection, agricultural development, and economic cooperation. And we do this through development of regional policies and strategies, the domestication of existing African Union innovative frameworks and instruments, and the building of human and institutional capacities. We are also involved in research to build and share knowledge and information, and also through our implementation units, the implementation support to member states. Now, the AU's development agenda in the context of Agenda 2063 calls for the eradication of poverty in one generation and the building of a prosperous continent powered by sustainable green and blue economies. IGAD's development agenda is reflected in three operational divisions, whose focus is on natural resource management and agricultural development, as well as promotion of trade and economic cooperation. Among the sectors prioritized for regional leadership is the development in IGAD region, sustainable agriculture, climate prediction, infrastructure, and focus on health conditions endemic to the region. Recognizing that IGAD's region is prone to droughts arising from an environment that is 70% arid and semi-arid, the IGAD Secretariat, together with member states and development partners, have prepared the IGAD Drought Disaster Resilience and Sustainability Initiative strategy, whose aim is to work regionally to end drought emergencies. The sheer size geographically of ASALs in the region makes IDRISI a key driver of IGAD's development agenda. It is unique in its bringing together various priorities under one platform, all focused on the most marginalized and least developed regions of IGAD. The IDRISI initiative has so far attracted close to $1 billion in investment, but continues to be plagued by challenges. One would love to see more investments that go to long-term development, a reduction of conflicts to allow for investments, and tangible investments driven by private sector, and also leveraging of technology. Other regional development frameworks within IGAD include the domestication of the Comprehensive Africa Agriculture Development Program, CADIP, the Regional Migration Policy, Regional Transhuman Protocol, and the IGAD Sustainable Tourism Master Plan. In operational support, the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center, ICPAC, uses meteorological data in weather forecasting and research into climate change to support livestock development, disaster management, and conflict resolution, while the IGAD Regional AIDS Program, IRAP, supports IGAD member states fight HIV/AIDS, focusing on mobile populations in the region. In infrastructure, IGAD currently coordinates the development of six road corridors, 5 railway lines, and 3 energy connectivity projects, all worth over $26 billion. These infrastructure projects are critical to the economic growth of the region and regional integration. It is self-evident that there can be no development in the absence of peace and security. Agenda 26-3, Aspirations 3 and 4, calls for an Africa guided by democracy, universal human rights, and rule of law, and led by transformative leadership that builds a society in which guns are not needed, conflicts are resolved justly, peacefully, and collectively, and diversity is a resource and driver for growth. IGAD is currently in the process of reviewing its peace and security strategy in conjunction with member states. The 2010-2014 strategy, which prioritized conflict prevention, management, and resolution, preventive diplomacy, and cooperation to counter transnational crimes, and in all other areas of peace and security, is in sync with the Africa peace and security architecture. It has evolved the development of regional frameworks, including the Mutual Legal Assistance and Extradition Conventions as a primary instrument for legal cooperation, and the IGAD Protocol on Democracy and Governance and Elections. IGAD's pioneer regional early warning framework has been upgraded to a fifth generation integrated early warning and response framework, and in 2013 was useful interventions in 28 different conflict situations across the IGAD region. Operationally, IGAD has established a roster of mediators ready for deployment, continued with mediation to end the South Sudan crisis, has supported the Somali stabilization and state building process and the Sudan national dialogue process, and also trained member states in, among others, countering the financing of terrorism, prosecuting terrorism, and human rights. In addition, just a few days ago, the East African Standby Force was launched, making the same operational. In relation to improvements to Agenda 26-3, we start by saying that an examination of the AMISOM and IGAD mission to South Sudan reveals that IGAD's political will to implement its normative commitments to peace and security is not matched by its capacity and resources. IGAD requires extensive financial, logistical, and political support in order to fulfill its commitments to peace and security, including to the protection of civilians. Importantly, it should be noted that humanitarian support alone is inadequate. Long-term development support offered concurrently builds a better chance to avoid relapse into conflict. In Somalia, for example, it is necessary that newly liberated areas see peace dividends. Donor support to both immediate relief and recovery activities and long-term strategies to reduce poverty and build a sustainable peace is essential. In a word, building resilience, including financial resilience for peace building and peacekeeping, and in all other aspects, should be part of Agenda 26-3. In support of operationalization of Agenda 26-3, it is instructive to note that the IGAD regional strategy, which is developed in consultation with member states, has within its context sectoral policies and strategies which provide frameworks for action by IGAD. The IGAD regional strategy is fully in line with both the current strategic plan of 2014-2017 of the African Union and Agenda 2063. And lastly, in relation to the UN support to RECs in operationalization of Agenda 2063, we wish to note that we are all members of the UN system. What is required is for us to build better partnerships for collaborative investments, knowledge management, and institutional capacity building. Syncing our programs and projects and leveraging each other's comparative advantages should be the norm. At the very least, the regional economic activities should be consulted in the planning and development of regional programs and projects by UN agencies. As a start, the UN could begin by establishing specific offices for RECs, just as we have offices for the AU and for member states. The UN should further use the AU's geographic classification of Africa. The different UN agencies have different geographic classification for Africa, and the differences between UN classification and the RECs pose challenges to REC when working with UN agencies in implementation of specific programs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Next is Ms. Elizabeth Mutunga, the head of Governance, Peace and Security in COMESA. Ms. Mutunga, please.
Excellencies, I'm delighted on behalf of the of COMESA and of the Secretary General, Mr. Sindiso Ngwenya, who was unable to make it. I'm delighted to make this presentation on the role that COMESA is playing in the Agenda 2063. Next slide, please. Chair, COMESA has been implementing the free trade area since 2000, and we started to launched the customs union in 2009. To date, Chair, we have got 17 countries operating in the free trade area, while at the same time working together with EAC and SADC, we have started to implement the tripartite free trade area. Chair, you may be aware that the African Union is planning to implement its free trade area in 2017, and therefore the three RECs are working providing an invaluable foundation for the continental free trade area, which in itself is a key aspiration to the AU Agenda 2063. Chair, because of the limited time given to me, I will only highlight a few areas of progress made over the last 12 months, specifically on the areas of peace and security. First, we'll just touch on the early warning system. We have made a lot of progress to support a structural prevention of conflict through our early warning system, and I will shortly expand on that. Secondly, we have also made some progress this last 12 months to support post-conflict reconstruction and specifically supporting cross-border mechanisms for peace building at the Great Lakes region, and I will also expand on that. Thirdly, we continue to support consolidation of democracy, and this has been done through several ways. We've got the COMESA Committee of Elders, which has been active with the working usually in collaboration with the AU Panel of the Wise to conduct pre-election assessment missions. And over the last 12 months, for example, we observed elections in Swaziland, Rwanda, Madagascar, and recently in Malawi and in Egypt. Chair, this year we also commenced the implementation of a regional maritime security program, which has been developed jointly with IGAD, EAC, and IOC, COMESA taking a lead role in the economic aspects of piracy. Specifically, we are working with the financial intelligence units and the law enforcement agencies in member states to try and reduce financial flows that relate to piracy. I said I would want to expand a little bit on our early warning system, because I believe that if it is implemented comprehensively, it is going to become a very important tool towards the attainment of the Agenda 2063. COMESA, working in close collaboration with the African Union Continental Early Warning System, has developed a model that is centered on an index which is called the COMESA Peace and Prosperity Index, the CPPI. It is theory-informed and data-driven, and it primarily focused on structural attributes that are associated with the escalation of conflict and underdevelopment. Since it is structural, Chair, it is early warning at its very early stages rather than crisis prevention. Next slide, please. And next. I will skip this. Next. I also wanted to elaborate a little bit on the work that we've done in post-conflict reconstruction and development. And specifically, we have, since 2006, been using trade as a mechanism for peace and security in the Great Lakes region. Our target has been small-scale cross-border traders and border communities at the Great Lakes region. Chair, I know you will. A lot has been said about integration being targeted at big businesses, but while we do this program, we are actually targeting on small businesses to benefit on integration. Our entry point has been the construction of trade information desks at various border posts because we identified that reliable trade information has been one of the big challenges that the cross-border traders have been experiencing. Next slide, please. And over the last 12 months, the trade information desks, we have established 12 of them, have been able to report that 13,000 incidences have provided information to women, and 6,000 times have they provided information to men. What I'm trying to show with this is that the program is not only looking at the small-scale traders, but also very much focused on the gender aspects of the trade information. Next slide, please. Apart from that, Chair, this year we also mobilized some resources to further enhance or strengthen those border communities. And what we are looking to do is to construct markets and feeder roads and market feeder roads and warehouses at the border areas. And the whole idea is to increase opportunities for greater interaction between our border communities, and also to empower the border communities, which I have already mentioned are mostly women. And this infrastructure is also going to create employment both directly and indirectly. So, again, we are going to be reducing incentive for conflict at the border areas and especially at the Eastern DRC. Next slide, please. This is just the map to show where we have established the 10 trade information desks. And those little hats is the areas that we are focusing to do a greater infrastructural projects. Next slide, please. You asked us on the areas of Agenda 2063 that still needs to be strengthened. And we thought we could look at where we are actually making good progress. And where we are making good progress is in the area of governance and democracy. If you look at COMESA, more than 90% of our countries are now holding democratic elections regularly. I know elections are not necessarily synonymous to governance, but nevertheless, it's a good pointer. We are also making good progress in Africa, that is, in the area of peace and security. The conflicts have been reduced quite significantly, and most importantly, these have been done through African-led mediation. And next slide, please. But there are still aspects of the agenda that still needs to be strengthened, and that's I've just identified or highlighted a few again because of the constraints of time. And one of the things is... The whole idea of a prosperous Africa that is based on inclusive growth is still appears to be elusive, and as we see the continued gap between the rich and the poor. There is also the issue of political integration, and while we are making a lot of progress in economic integration, we are not making as much progress in political integration. And I also thought to touch on the issue of implementation because. One of the big issues that we are having and we will continue to have is that that most of the Africa, the AU and the RECs, are not generating resources for implementation from inward. And it will be very important for us to start generating these resources from within the continent. And the other thing is it will be very important for a stronger coordination role by the AU and a stronger implementation role by the RECs. Next slide. And with respect to how COMESA is going to support the implementation of the Agenda 2063, one of the things that we are doing right now in governance, peace, and security is that we are developing our strategic plan. And are we planning to break down the aspirations or the targets of the Agenda 2063 into five-year components and incorporate those within the COMESA strategic plan? And we are also looking to also support this with a good M&D framework. And another area is that we intend to use our policy organs and meetings to advocate for the implementation of the Agenda 2063. The next slide, please. And I think that's the last slide, is how you, UN and other, and your agencies can support us better. One of the areas will be to support us to domesticate this agenda. And the second one will be to help us to mainstream it into our strategic plan, which I have just talked about. Another one will be to assist us to develop national early response cross-sectoral units. Because, Chair, as long as we can be giving early warning, but as long as there's no early response, it's not going to be very useful. So we really need to start strengthening the early warning and early response linkage. And I think it would be important if you could assist us to evaluate the impact of the projects that we are doing at the border areas, especially on the conflict prevention dimension and the socioeconomic aspects. Because if you can find that there's a good impact, then we would probably be able to duplicate this and on other border areas that require it. Chair, I submit.
Thank you very much, Ms. Elizabeth Mutunga. I must apologize for all speakers for putting them under the pressure of time, but I'm also pressured under the pressure of time. But our commitment is that we will put your full presentations, PowerPoint presentation, and your full statements into our new website as soon as possible, so that everybody can get the full picture of what have been said. We will now move on to the session four, perspectives of the special representatives and envoys of the Secretary General on how the United Nations system can further enhance support to the RECs in consolidating peace, security, governance, and development in Africa. And the first presentation will be by Mr. Haile Mankarios, the Special Representative of the Secretary General to the African Union and the head of the United Nations Office to the African Union. Mr. Mankarios, please.
Mr. Chair, I will also try to be as brief as I can. The critical link between the economic and political aspects of life, between economic and social interaction, and thus between economic development and peace and security needs no emphasis. Such has defined the active role of the RECs, whose raison d'etre has been economic development and cooperation, integration, but at the same time have been playing critical roles in ensuring peace and security in their sub-region. The AU and the RECs play a key role in conflict prevention, mediation, and management in Africa, as seen in the current IGAD-led mediation in the crisis in South Sudan, the role of ECOWAS in the AU-led peace support operation in Mali, FISMA, and that of ECAS in the deployment of MICOPACS in the CAR before the transition to MISCA, as well as that of SADC in several peace efforts in Southern Africa, including the successful resolution of the long simmering conflict in Madagascar. Recent initiatives have been shaped by the recognition of the need of the UN and the AU and the RECs cooperation in conflict management and mediation to harness comparative advantages and relative political clout with parties to conflict. And the UN has established the practice of following the lead of the AU or the RECs, or the RMs, in addressing peace and security issues while it lends full support to these efforts as necessary. In fact, there is full recognition now in the Security Council, which, as you all very well know for quite some time, you know, jealously guarded the priority in dealing with peace and security. Now, whenever there are issues of peace and security in Africa, in the RECs, the first question it asks is, what is Africa planning to do about it? how does the AU plan to engage? How do the regional economic commissions actually plan to engage? And this is quite a recognition, quite a long way we've come from 1945. The same thing with the African Union. There was grudging, or the RECs even, grudging, in other words, you know, reaction to the AU, to the UN, sometimes not considering regional conditions, regional interests in deploying or in engaging in peace and security efforts, but now recognizes fully that a responsive UN is critically important in addressing peace and security issues in Africa. And I think this relationship has come as a result of the active participation of all involved in addressing peace and security issues, and that when they do cooperate, success has resulted. When they don't cooperate, then success has not been forthcoming to that extent. There are many examples of ongoing cooperation, and I don't need to go into all of them, actually, since all of us participate in one way or another, have seen them. I would just like to point out to one important aspect of the nature of the cooperation that had existed between the UN and the African Union and the RECs also. It has all been ad hoc. It has not been systematic in the sense that we have been looking at problems when they occur. You get a problem in Sudan, for example. What kind of a problem do we have? How do we deploy? The African Union deploys already. And then since there is deployment, how do we deal with that? It was reactive to a problem that was there already. There was no pre-planning. The same thing in Somalia. The UN was there. The UN leaves. And then the African Union comes. Piracy and all that comes. How do we then interact in such a thing becomes sort of a discussion basis when the issue is already there. The same thing in CAR, I could mention Moon. I think it is time that this cooperation between the UN, the AU, and the RECs has to be escalated, elevated into a strategic relationship. A strategic relationship would mean we would have utilize all the resources we have to reach a common understanding of what is the basis, what is creating all these conflicts. Once there is a common understanding and we have many resources both in the regions and in the UN, then it would be easy then to develop how do we approach them. A common approach. Once a common approach is developed, then it's identifying who has the advantages, the relative advantages, in other words, you know, to deploy. Deployment, for example, for African countries, in reality, whenever there is not peace to keep, in other words, when there is peace enforcement, it has been African countries that have first developed, that have taken really the risk of deploying. Whereas the UN, a huge machine, takes much time to get countries to offer peacekeepers and then to deploy peacekeepers. It takes quite some time, a minimum of 6 months sometimes, whereas regional countries have been ready to deploy and also to quickly deploy without all the conditions that make UN peace missions cumbersome. And thus, in peacemaking, for example, in Sudan, where even if the Secretary General was to do the best he can, he couldn't field a much stronger, in other words, mediation team as the AU has done. Three former presidents, all able, and therefore the UN has come to support such a thing. If it was dealing with drug trafficking, for example, it would make sense to have the UN perhaps be in the lead, because Africa is neither the source nor the consumer of those drugs. It is a conduit, and therefore it deals having to coordinate globally on how to address this issue. And therefore, We in the African Union, with the African Union, and in the sub-regions, will be developing this more strategic relationship in the time to come. Let me just stop there to just give the framework so that we could lead to this could lead to discussions if necessary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mankerios. Next is a presentation by Mr. Ismail Jannit, Special Envoy of the Secretary General for the Great Lakes Region. Mr. Jannit.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will make my contribution to this discussion in my capacity as outgoing Special Representative of the Secretary General for West Africa. In my work in West Africa, our relation and cooperation with ECOWAS as the key regional organization has been pivotal. We have seen our role as first and foremost supporting and backing ECOWAS' own initiatives and activities. Because the raison d'etre of UNOA is to support the efforts of the region and its organization, especially ECOWAS. It was also paramount for us to preserve the regional ownership. Because also ECOWAS was central to every regional initiative in West Africa in all areas, ranging from peace and security to agriculture, health, and trade. Because finally, ECOWAS has proved over the years to be one of the most effective and dynamic regional organizations in the continent with advanced level of integration. So we therefore took every opportunity to support their own initiatives in the variety of activities they have undertaken. But we have also developed some other ways of supporting regional economic groupings, ECOWAS in West Africa and others. First one is accompanying and complementing their role. In many instances, especially in the area of peace and security, the UN accompanied and joined hands with ECOWAS in undertaking joint initiatives and actions. We brought the universal support and perspective to the efforts aimed at addressing crises in that region, as well as some level of expertise. Yet these joint efforts and actions have always been placed under the leadership of ECOWAS for the sake of regional ownership. All crises that happened in the region from 2008, when I was personally there, to date, have been subject of joint activities. I name Guinea during the transition, Guinea-Bissau, Niger, Cote d'Ivoire, Togo, Benin, Mali, and other issues. Second way of supporting ECOWAS and the region was through emulating and playing a catalytic role as a UN. In other instances, therefore, the UN has been instrumental in assisting ECOWAS to take fresh initiatives or give more impetus to some ongoing initiatives. In this respect, the UN had played a critical role in emulating debate and decisions on drug trafficking and organized crime in West Africa, security and development in the Sahel, addressing piracy in the Gulf of Guinea, addressing transborder security in the Manu River Union region, and in addressing the role of women in peace based on Resolution 1325 and subsequent resolutions. Third, we have also developed a way of supporting ECOWAS through promoting cooperation among regional organizations. The UN has been making every effort to promote cooperation and cohesion among regional organizations and avoid the counterproductive competition between these institutions. In this regard, UNOWA has played a key role in facilitating cooperation and joint actions between regional organizations, including, just for the sake of examples, various joint ECOWAS, AU, UN peace initiatives, again, in Guinea, Niger, Guinea-Bissau, Benin, etc. In bringing together ECOWAS and Manu River Union within the framework of the transborder security strategy, working especially with the Commissioner, Madame Salamato, here. And finally, in assisting in promoting cooperation between ECOWAS, SEAC from Central Africa, the Commission of Gulf of Guinea, in addressing the scourge of piracy in the Gulf of Guinea. These are the areas where we have been playing a catalytical role. And lastly, the last way is to bringing comparative advantage to and value added to the region as the UN. The UN has been able to bring its unique comparative advantage in pursuing regional initiatives and efforts through peacekeeping deployment. We have seen it in Cote d'Ivoire, Mali, and before that, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and elsewhere. And this is a region where the UN has invested a lot in peacekeeping, in pursuing regional initiatives. And in few instances, the UN has been able to bring comparative advantage in good offices and mediation. And I refer to the Cameroon-Nigeria border dispute, where the UN has been playing a good office's role, and other border disputes in Central Africa, but also facilitation of the inter-Congolese dialogue, where the UN has brought value added, although I was the international facilitator appointed by the Secretary General, but I worked hand-in-hand with ECOWAS, and the ECOWAS and AU have endorsed the appointment, so I was acting also on behalf of ECOWAS and the African Union. So the ways of we have developed in West Africa in terms of supporting the regional economic groupings, but all did not go perfectly. I would like to just quote three areas where we could improve our working together. First, there is need to enhance capacity building. The lack of capacity of the RECs, of the regional economic groupings, and in this case, ECOWAS, has been one of the main obstacles to our cooperation. More often than not, you see few people dealing with all issues. It happens in all the organizations, and I must say, sometimes in the UN. So we have also to deal. And then we have not been good, from my own perspective, in providing capacity building to the regional economic groupings. At least, as you know, acting on behalf of the UN, I have not been capable of providing any meaningful capacity building to ECOWAS. Second, information sharing and regular consultations. Although we have worked hand in hand, on some instances, and I could remember one, Guinea-Bissau, there was some misunderstanding between the ECOWAS and the AU and the UN. Eventually, I think ECOWAS did a wonderful job and they should be commended for that. We now working together. I think a better working relation and the sharing of information could have helped. And lastly, the problem of, I mean, I'm talking here as a small peace support operation in West Africa. We are expected to do a lot with the little resources. So again, there is the limit of having a great mandate like the mandate of UNOWA with very little resources. And lastly, in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I would like to say that it has been exciting to work in West Africa and with ECOWAS, the AU, and the Mano River Union in that region. I guess that it's not going to be less exciting to work in the Great Lakes region, where I will have to serve as the EC Special Envoy of Secretary General, but dealing with a multitude of regional economic groupings there because they have more than West Africa and more challenging to deal with more other visible and invisible stakeholders. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Said Jenit. I think you are used to exciting tasks, whether in the former capacity in the African Union or in the new capacities in the West Africa and then in the Great Lakes. We wish you luck in these capacities. The next presentation is by Mr. Abdoulaye Bathily, the Special Representative of the Secretary General for Central Africa and the head of UNOCA. Mr. Bathily, please.
Mr. Chair, I would like to render a homage to one of our colleagues, Margaret Fogg, who has just passed away. By her teaching, by her work as an academic, but also through her work at the AU and as SRG in Central Africa, she has very much contributed to the work we are talking here about. For the sake of summarizing what I want to say,
a certain number of things very quickly. UNOCA works with ECAS, and the representative of ECAS just now indicated the areas in which this sub-regional organization has undertaken a number of initiatives. As you know, UNOCA has the permanent secretariat of the Committee for Security in Central Africa. And in that regard, we have worked and will continue to work very closely with ECAS. They give us the essential information with regard to developments in the security situation, a twice-yearly report for the Central African region. The issue of maritime piracy has been referred to by several speakers here. The Special Representative, Said Jinit, just referred to that. In cooperation with UNOA and also in cooperation with ECAS and ECOWAS, we have just established the Inter-Regional Committee for Maritime Security in the Gulf of Guinea. And that work is going to be intensified once this regional committee is up and running. Also, in the area of peace building, we, of course, have been involved in all activities pertaining to Central Africa. And recently at the Brazzaville Forum, we worked very closely with ECAS and the African Union. And with these three organizations, we provide mediation for a return of peace and security to Central Africa, and particularly Central African Republic. With regard to recommendations, what would we say? Well, I think what we can see today is that the region of Central Africa is facing a number of challenges, and it is essential that this coordination between the African Union, ECAS, and UNOCA that we lead, that this coordination be focused even more and be more systematic. My colleague Haile Menkerios stressed that it's important not to work on a case-by-case basis, but to work on a strategic basis with a common vision worked out together with a common roadmap. And with regard to these challenges, there are a number of issues to be addressed. The issue of democratic transitions. Everyone knows that the Central African region is facing some very difficult democratic transitions today, some of them quite chaotic, and it's important in the area of preventive diplomacy and good offices, important that UNOCA, ECAS, and the African Union work together hand in hand. There's also the very important issue of economic integration. And on that, everybody knows that ECAS still has a lot to do in this area. There is a lot of resistance with regard to free circulation of people and goods, above all people. That issue is something we need to pay close attention to. The issue of the role of women in peace processes and also in economic integration is important, and I welcome here the efforts undertaken by our a colleague from SADC. She just told us now about the activities that they are involved in, and I think we can learn from successful experiments in the various sub-regions. And by learning those lessons, we can improve what we do. And I think very often we don't take enough account of our respective lessons. It's not just an issue of speaking to each other, but we need to learn from each other, from these good practices. And of course, if there have been failures, learn from those as well. The issue of refugees is also a pressing problem in this region. How can these two or three organizations together better coordinate our efforts to put an end to the suffering of these populations? The issue of terrorism increasingly is becoming a serious threat for the region of Central Africa, not just the Lord Resistance Army. And we're working on that with ECAS and the African Union. We have a task force for the LRA, but also Boko Haram. starting in West Africa, they are now spreading like a cancer to the adjacent regions, and that as well is a source of concern. So those are the issues that I wanted to draw your attention to, and I think it's fundamental, once again, that we not work on a case-by-case basis, and that we're not reactive but proactive on these issues, and that can only be done if we have a joint strategy that we've agreed upon together in if we want to achieve positive results. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bettely. Having heard both views from the REX and from the United Nations representatives on the ground, now we'll open the floor for the speakers. I have 10 speakers on my list, and we have around 15. If I can extend it to another 5 minutes to 20 minutes, so that means 2 minutes each, very brief messages, and we will not be even having a chance to respond even to those or to make a summary of what have been discussed. I have been consulting with my co-chairs and co-organizers, and we will work on this afterwards and will send it to you by email on what have transpired throughout this meeting today. The first speaker on my list is Spain. Spain is in the room. They're not here. Okay, and then we move over to Japan. Ambassador Okamura.
Okay, maybe I can speak 4 minutes.
No, 2 minutes only. That's smart
President.
Japanese
merci,
way.
President. Excellent.
Thank you, Chair. Excellencies, distinguished representatives, ladies and gentlemen. I wish to thank the representatives of the RECs for this excellent briefing. I should also like to convey my thanks and appreciation for this initiative of the co-organizers of this very timely and useful meeting. The co-organizers, especially Ambassador Abdelaziz, the Special Advisor for Africa, Mr. Abdoulaye Mardié, the Director of UNDP's Regional Bureau for Africa, Ambassador Tete Antonio, Permanent Observer of the African Union to the United Nations. And I'm very grateful because these eminent personalities are major supporters of the aspect that I was Secretary Director General of last year. This process could not have taken place without their support. I thank you.
In June 2013, the fifth TICAD summit meeting was held in the city of Yokohama. At the meeting, participants committed to pursuing quality growth in Africa through a robust and sustainable economy, an inclusive and resilient society, and peace and stability. We also share the views that it is indispensable to promote African development in such sectors as infrastructure and agriculture at the regional level through the RECs, and to maximize economies of scale, given the small sizes of economies in many of the most vulnerable countries in Africa. Also at TICAD 5, Japan announced its assistance package to Africa, which I would like to touch upon briefly. In the area of infrastructure, we have committed to supporting the formulation of 10 strategic master plans for urban transportation and infrastructure planning. These plans are regional and support the economic growth of Africa through the creation of corridors or growth rings for regional development across multiple borders. 3 plans out of the 10 are already either underway or pledged. The role of RECs is all the more important for this purpose. In the area of peace and stability, we have committed to support the activity of the AU and REX towards the consolidation of peace, including the implementation of capacity development of the African peace and security architecture. In the area of trade, we are focusing on capacity development of the REX. In January this year, Prime Minister Abe of Japan visited Africa, specifically Cote d'Ivoire, Mozambique, and Ethiopia. His visit aimed to show Japan's commitment to the peace and stability, economic growth, and business of not only these countries, but also of the regions in which they reside. Thanks to the initiative of President Alassane Ouattara of Cote d'Ivoire, chair of ECOWAS, an important summit meeting was held between ECOWAS and Japan during Prime Minister Abe's visit to Cote d'Ivoire. Participants at the summit proposed the improvement of transportation infrastructure network at the regional level. We are currently in the process of considering this proposal in Tokyo. In addition, last week, in the occasion of attending the United Nations General Assembly, Prime Minister Abe held a second REX Summit Roundtable, attended by the chairs of the REX and other important regional organizations. A lively discussion was held on the theme of infrastructure, following last year's theme, which was agriculture. So now I can say that Japan believes that the Africa's prosperity is Japan's prosperity, and Africa's problem is Japan's problem. So that is the reason why Japan is determined to make its utmost efforts in fighting against Ebola outbreak. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, while attending the high-level meeting on the response to the Ebola virus disease outbreak last week, expressed Japan's full support to the Secretary General's initiative. He also pledged to extend additional assistance totaling $40 million in order to reinforce the measures already announced. In addition, he made clear Japan's intent to consider providing additional resources, including personal protective equipment, vehicles, and medical staff. As Prime Minister Abe stated last week, there is no prosperity in the world without the prosperity of Africa. Japan is more determined than ever to move forward side by side with Africa. So in conclusion, we believe that themes of consolidating peace, security, governance, and development can be discussed most efficiently using the forum of the REX. Japan is also determined to continue to consolidate and to operationalize Africa's economic development through the best use of the TICAD process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Okamura. You took 6 minutes, not only four. Next is the representative of Turkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to be briefer. Mr. Chairman, distinguished participants, as we are at the crossroads of defining the post-2015 development agenda, it is important to have a comprehensive discussion on how to achieve and finance Africa's sustainable development. Mr. Chairman, while official development assistance is one of the major sources of financing for Africa's development, the amount being provided is below the UN target of 0.7% of donors' national income. The REX have a central place in the formulation of Agenda 2063, which includes more robust engagement of the REX in the realization of common continental goals, including those on peace and security, democratic governance, social and economic, as well as sustainable development. Thanks to REX, significant progress has been achieved so far in regional integration in Africa. Turkey welcomes the growing influence and importance of the REX. Mr. Chairman, Turkey supports African solutions to African problems. Ownership and leadership of African countries and African RECs are essential for ensuring peace, security, and sustainable development in the continent. In today's volatile security environment, laden with multidimensional and complicated challenges, the UN alone is not capable of dealing with all the problems threatening international peace and security. Addressing the conflicts at their core entails strong and influential regional partners. RECs' role is vital in ensuring peace, security, and stability in cooperation with the UN, as outlined in Chapter 8 of the UN Charter. RECs are well equipped to address the root causes of conflicts because they are on the ground. In this regard, we welcome the ever-improving cooperation between the UN and the RECs. Mr. Chairman, Turkey, as the co-chair of the Group of Friends of Mediation, along with Finland and its 45 members, recognizes the key role of these organizations in the field of mediation and conflict prevention and resolution. The third Istanbul Conference on Mediation, held in Istanbul on the 26th of June, 2014, was dedicated to the theme of understanding the role of regional organizations in mediation. We attach utmost importance to developing our relations with RECs. We are glad for the establishment of the institutional relations between Turkey and the RECs and with the African Development Bank. The second Turkey-Africa Partnership Summit will be held in Malabo on the 19th to 21st of November 2014. One of the side events of the summit will be the Turkey-RECs meeting with the participation of the Ministers of Economies of Turkey and the chairing countries of the RECs, as well as the Secretary Generals of the RECs and institutional representatives of the Turkish private sector. As two-thirds of the least developing countries are in Africa, supporting LDCs and promoting investment in these countries are another means to uplift Africa's economic performance and investment climate. Timely and effective implementation of and international support for the Istanbul Program of Action for LDCs are of crucial importance in that sense. We are currently preparing ourselves for the review conference of the Istanbul Program of Action again in Istanbul in 2015. We are ready to share our development experience with African counterparts in order to broaden and strengthen the cooperation and commercial relations among themselves and to strengthen the RECs through capacity building efforts such as training programs and technical assistance. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Egypt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be very brief. Agenda 6, Africa 2063 is extremely ambitious. This is and it will take up to 5 decades to implement. That's why we believe that it's extremely crucial to have a periodic review for this agenda, where all parties, including African Union as well as the RECs, explain or examine their progress periodically throughout their efforts in the continent. In this regard, it's very important. I have to note what has been mentioned by our colleagues from ECOWAS and from COMESA regarding breaking down Agenda 2063 into components or regional components. We believe that RECs, as the pillars of the EU, are very should be playing the a crucial role in this regard. But at the same time, there are certain goals or aspirations of Africa 2063 that. Where the RECs have relative advantage. For example, the Aspiration 2, which is related to African integration. We believe this could be the main area where RECs provide significant progress and give us a periodic review every few years on the role of African integration according to aspiration number two. My final question to the panel is regarding the interaction between the agenda, post 2015 agenda, and Africa 2063, and it's a question to what could be the role of the African Union and the United Nations Secretariat regarding harmonizing both agendas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is New Zealand. Ambassador, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In its own region, in places such as Timor-Leste, in Bougainville, and in the Solomon Islands, New Zealand has learned the great value of an immediate region can play in helping to address and to prevent future conflict. For that reason, Mr. Chairman, New Zealand is supportive of a strong role not only for regional organisations, but sub-regions as well. In the case of Mali, the Central African Republic, South Sudan, or most recently Lesotho, we have seen the crucial, immediate and positive role that sub-regional organisations can play if they are adequately supported. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, we support Africa in seeking solutions to its own problems, with, of course, the proper support from outside, most notably from this United Nations. Sadly, in those circumstances, the response to some of the issues that have confronted the African continent, you haven't been supported as well by the UN system as might have been hoped. From the Mali experience, we hope the UN system has learned lessons about the need to act more nimbly and to take on board in faster time the requests and views of regions and sub-regions. Mr. Chair, as a small state, New Zealand has an inherent understanding of the need for regional cooperation to make things happen and to make them happen quickly. Based on that practical experience, we are pledged to stay in close contact with those, including the African Union and its regional entities, whose issues, whose people are most directly impacted by UN decisions, and will work with them accordingly.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. Next is Cape Verde, Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Chair. I wish to thank you for having organized this meeting. It's a very important one for our future discussions, especially of Agenda 2063 and post-2015 discussion. Chair, for a country like my own, issues affecting African countries, well, for us, well, we're a member of a sub-regional commission, there are members of our organization and UN membership, and perhaps following on what we've heard from Egypt, since my country fits into these three different configurations, there are issues that are important for us. We need stakeholders to be involved in order to have results, but in order to have good results, we need coordination. And for this to be effective, well, we have all these different players. However, it is not clear to us what advantages certain ones provide over others. There's an amalgam of contributions here for a specific objectives, but this part is not clear to us. And so this legitimately poses a question of legitimacy. And I apologize if this runs counter to what we've heard, but these are my thoughts on the matter. It seems to me that when we speak of peace and security, we have the African Union and the United Nations. Regional organizations are above all dealing with economic integration. And so perhaps we should try to look at this more clearly, and I wonder whether we couldn't try to assign a role to each separate entity to understand, for example, what UNDP is doing, the different organizations, the support from UNDP to those organizations, and how we're working with the African Union, and how we can work together with the Office of the Special Advisor for Africa. What specific roles can be played? Earlier we heard from Egypt, and I think those words were very encouraging. I think we need to conduct this exercise so that we each can know exactly where we stand and where we are going. And so it would be helpful to have a breakdown of this and to figure out where we are and how we can take this major undertaking of the United Nations that is to address post-2015 and see how we can organize this in line with our priorities within the African Union. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ambassador. I think you have asked also, like the representative of Egypt, very pertinent questions that I personally have been asking, and even in our meetings among the Interdepartmental Task Force on African Affairs. And I'm sure that our also partners in the African Union are asking about how to break down this and how to assign certain responsibilities for each department and each office and each responsible to be held responsible for this for the next phase of time. But it will all depend on how much the African Union would allow us at the UN to interfere or to support or to implement. So we are waiting for a signal from the African Union and from the RECs on how much support does the African Union, because the African Union considers this an African agenda. And we should not be intruding into something that we have not been asked to support. And that is the core of the matter of how much does the African Union want support. But to continue with the discussion of this important issue, I would invite you, particularly you and your neighbor and neighbor of neighbor, to come to the high-level discussion that is going to be on Monday, the 13th of October, on this issue. With the support of the African Union, we will have here the Commissioner for Peace and Security, Ismail Shergi. We will have the Commissioner for Economic Affairs, Mr. Maro Ping. We will have Professor Mayaki, the CEO of NEPAD. We will have the APRM representatives, and we will have the President of General Assembly and the Deputy Secretary General attending this kind of discussion, because we have to get the clearer picture of where do we stand and how, what role should each and every one of us play in the support of this. And this, I hope that this also answers the question that was asked by Egypt about how to harmonize the post-2015 and the Agenda 2063. I think that this, the discussion on this continues, because they have to be mutually supportive and mutually reinforcing. I still have the EU, Eritrea, and the Queen Mother, and I would like to appeal to everybody to be brief so that we can finish, and then Ambassador Tete is going to make some concluding remarks. EU.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try just to make a single point on peace and security, and we will send you our full, some of the other points which we would have liked to make was time permitting. The regional economic communities are the regional pillars of the African peace and security architecture. We believe that a fully operational African peace and security architecture is key to give Africa the capabilities to prevent conflicts and react quickly and in an effective manner to crises. Since 2004, the African Peace Facility has become a central instrument for implementing the Africa-EU cooperation on peace and security, and more than €1.2 billion of funding has been channeled through this instrument. The bulk of the funding has been allocated to peace operations, but the African Peace Facility has also provided important support to the AU and to the regional economic communities, including to strengthening the relationship between the African Union and the regional economic communities, which is essential to make the African peace and security architecture successful. While EU funding is important, the African peace and security architecture is first and foremost an African project, which needs to be supported by African states. We are concerned that at the moment, the African peace and security architecture appears to depend on external funding, which is not sustainable. To promote ownership, the African peace and security architecture building blocks, i.e. the African Union and the regional economic communities, need to be backed up politically and financially by African member states. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Next is Eritrea, Ambassador.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the spirit of saving time, I'll stick to your two-point limitation. And all protocol observed, distinguished participants, Eritrea totally agrees with the role, objectives, goals, and vision of the establishment of the African REX. It is a noble cause which has no other option. Regional peace, economic integration, social and economic cooperation is the way forward for Africa. Having said that, I will try to think out of the box and mention 2 points. The first one is we have to be careful for the REX not to be abused and used for geopolitical interests of the big powers or national interests of particular country in the respective regions. There is a tendency by global powers to designate and mandate a particular country or government to become a leading country or anchor for any issue that is raised in particular region. This is not only wrong, but impossible. It is not acceptable. It is not sustainable. It will create conflict. It will go against the letter and the spirit of establishing the African REX. Number two, we all agreed REX are the building blocks for African unity and economic integration. No African nation should be isolated or left behind for participating in one of those building blocks, be it in COMESA, ECOWAS, IGAD, CINSAD, or you name it all. But today we see this kind of fault line in IGAD. Eritrea is a founding member of IGAD, and I was part of the team which really wrote the charter. In violation of the charter, IGAD has not even maintained a regular summit for the last 7 years. This is not correct. It has to be corrected. And I'm not criticizing because I'm the Eritrean ambassador. I'm just simply criticizing because these are principles, principles for Africa, for any regional organization to adhere. And I hope the spirit of inclusiveness, Eritrea's membership should be ascertained. And then until the doomsday, we don't know when Allah or God is going to configure the world. Eritrea is part and parcel of the region. So I hope IGAD takes this idea with a noble cause and respect and rectify its mistakes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. Please also note that the Maghreb Union has not met for about 10 years now and has not been answering our invitations to come to this. And I regret to say that I am part of the Maghreb Union originally as a citizen of Egypt. So these are kind of problems that have to be addressed on the political side, maybe by members of the sub-regional organization themselves. I have a strong plea from Djibouti to say one word or two words, and I'm going to grant this plea. Yeah. And I see the ambassador of Ethiopia is also asking. I mean, I hope that this is not going to turn into a political debate. Let us keep it at the technical level. So one word for Djibouti, one word for Ethiopia, and then the last speaker is going to be the Queen Mother. Okay. Djibouti, you want to speak?
Yes.
Yes, please. One word.
Thank you very much. And I can assure you that it's not a political discussion that Djibouti has the intention to have. I just would like to start thanking all the organizers for the meeting. And since I follow the annual meeting that we have here at the UN with the RECs, I'm very happy to see the format that we are having this year, because it's really an opportunity. We can see that there is an effort to have a dialogue and a discussion, an exchange of view between the UN and the African Union through the presentations of the RECs. And I just would like to thank all of them for their useful presentation. I just wanted to make, I felt compelled to react to the comment made by the representative and special envoy of the Secretary General, and it was also shared by the representative of the RECs. And I would like to make two comments, actually, two key words that I heard in this room: strategic partnership and relation between the UN and the African Union and the RECs. And another key word was capacity building. And my delegation would like to really emphasize on these elements that are key for the implementation of such ambitious agenda, such the Agenda 2063. And I think that if the RECs ought to be at the center of the implementation of that agenda, this is an area of focus. The capacity building, it's one of them. And the domestication of the agenda itself, it's very important, and RECs have a role to play in that. So I think that's an idea that is very important. And I think my colleague from IGAD made a concrete proposal referring to having UN representative for the RECs. But I think there is very, maybe we know that the financial and budgetary implication could be problematic from the UN perspective. But I think we could consider this idea by having focal points in the regional offices, maybe to start. And it's very important to have the mechanism in place for the implementation for the 10 years that are coming for the Agenda 2063. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Before giving the floor to Ethiopia, I just have to advise you that the interpreters are finished at 1:15 sharp, and that now we will continue in English. We have just finished to the last two speakers and to hear the summing up from Ambassador Tete Antonio. So, Ethiopia, please, Ambassador.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know that in a meeting like this, Under Secretary General Majid, I always make sure that I have to take the floor to appreciate for whatever you have been doing. And so I felt that I don't have to leave this room without saying what I have already said. And of course, we'd like to thank also the Ambassador Tete and UNDP also for their organization of this important meeting. I don't have really an intention to make anything what have been said here political or non-political. It's just simply to say that one thing, whenever we talk about peace and security, I think all of us will have to understand one thing. These are states and non-states which create problems, and that lead to some kind of insecurity and lack of peace in our sub-region. And I think states, especially the member states of the United Nations, they have the responsibility to act responsibly in interstate relations. And if they do that, I don't think there is any problem that we are going to think about. And we have at the same time also to really recognize the role that's being played by RECs, including the IGAD. And IGAD, as far as Ethiopia is concerned, it is an important sub-regional organization that has been playing a very important role in terms of keeping peace and bringing stability, political or security, in our region. So it has to be seen from that context. And again, Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that each of us, member states, we have to feel responsible. Unless we are the ones who created the problem, havoc in our region, there won't be any problem of peace and security. That has to be heeded by any member state of the United Nations. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. the last speaker, last but not least, the Queen Mother.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to say thank you for allowing me to speak from civil society. And in saying that to you, I also want to thank the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for allowing many stakeholders to be here during the 69th General Assembly, which I attended. And I was able to hear at least 30 heads of state address in the general debate in the General Assembly Hall. I also had the opportunity of attending a session with First Ladies calling for action. They want a plan of action for women and girls in their setting or in their session. What I would like to leave in terms of Region 6, part of the AU, which I truly represent beyond that of 55 million displaced Africans, the question that I raise for all of us coming out of the White House summit chaired by President Barack Obama of the United States of America, what are we and how are we mobilizing African nationals living in the United States, highly trained, skilled, in the field of medicine, science, and technology? Also, how do we deal with Ebola, peace and security, as well as empowering women and children? As I said to the business sector of millionaires and billionaires at the White House summit, Africa is not for sale. I will repeat it again from civil society and the voices that I hear throughout the African consciousness. Africa is not for sale. How will we negotiate for development of all of the stakeholders that are interested in the belly of Mother Africa with all of the natural resources that lies there? How will we deal with Ebola? How will we deal with peace and security? And how will we build with empowering women, children, and youth? I thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Queen Mother. You always ask the pertinent questions, but unfortunately we don't have much time to answer them this session. Maybe we can have this when we have the next discussion on the 13th of October. Now it is my pleasure to give the floor to Ambassador Tete Antonio to sum up, if he can. I'm not sure that he can have the time to sum up everything that have been said, but for concluding remarks, and then my colleague from UNDP before we close the meeting. Thank you.
Majid, thank you so much. As you just said, I don't think at this time we'll be able to sum up. We are going to circulate a summary of the meeting at the end. But I should really start by first joining my brother, Abdullahi, who just left the room, by paying a special tribute to the memory of our sister, Margaret Vogt, who have devoted an entire life to our continent. And we all know which was the contribution of Margaret Vogt to our work, not only as an academician, but also as a practitioner in the ground. So a special tribute to Margaret Vogt. And thank all of you for coming, partners and colleagues. I think since we started this exercise of organizing this meeting, we have had qualitative changes. We started with OSA in terms of actors. We now joined by the UNDP. In terms of participation also, there is a lot of changes, directs, presence of directs, and special representative and envoys on the ground. Now, as we said at the beginning, this initiative is very timely. Timely because the Agenda 2063 is an evolving process, which is going to be sealed, let's say, in January by the Assembly of the Heads of States. And I do believe that many of the recommendations made today by the RECs are going to be echoed in the final document, especially bearing in mind the place of the RECs. I know many of the recommendations had also to do with the place of the RECs within our mother organization. I do believe that bearing in mind the place of the RECs in the Agenda 2063 Operational Steering Committee, in which the RECs will be participating, this will be a very valuable forum for them, for the RECs also to continue to make their contributions. Now, a question was also debated on the need for a shift of paradigm in terms of how we cooperate between the AU and the United Nations, including with the RECs, need for change from a reactive approach to a strategic approach. I think this question has been discussed wherever we meet. I remember we had a meeting of the Joint Task Team. Also, this question was also raised, and how we have to move from the a reactive approach to a strategic approach. But this requires also a kind of, I will maybe use a too strong word, a review of our structures, a focus was made on OSA, for example, the role of OSA. When we talk about coordination, I think the main problem is how we move from the coordination, which we all love. We all speak about the coordination, but then when comes the time for coordination, nobody wants to coordinate. So we need to move from coordination to connectivity. I think we have not connected. We talk about coordination, but we have not connected in practice on how we deal. Coordination means within the UN family, challenges also are many. A coordination between ourselves, within the African family also, we need to coordinate. But now, there was also a question of raised by partners and many of our colleagues on how, where the world is going to fit, or the UN is going to fit in the Agenda 2063. As Majid, you said, we will be having a meeting next week on the 13th, where we will have the commissioners coming also to discuss on the same issue. But let's say that Africa is not closing the door to the world. What we are saying, we would like to be at the driving seat, but not really driving, not like a taxi driver whose direction is guided by a passenger sitting behind. So this is the main message I think we are trying to bring to the world. So Agenda 2063, and if you look at the document itself, it has a stakeholders relationship framework. I think the doors are certainly open, but open in terms of echoing the message we heard today by the RECs, by many of our partners, on the African ownership of the process. I think those are the keys for the cooperation on the Africa we want as a main message. So, Majid, I think I should thank all the UNDP and yourself and for all of us for joining efforts to make this event happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In the absence of my dear brother, Abdullah Imar, our colleague is going to make some few remarks.
Thank you very much, Your Excellencies. And I'm not concluding anything, just to thank everyone for attending this event. We thank all the excellencies that have been able to, give us this attention over the past 4 hours. We know it's by dedication for you to have been here for as long as that. We really appreciate your being here, and we really appreciate your contributions. All the contributions have been quite practical and, again, result-oriented. And we think this is the beginning of many other partnerships we'll be having. Please, as His Excellency Abdulaziz have said, and Ambassador Tete have said, the idea is for us to really come together in a more synergistic way, so that at least when we are talking about development in Africa, we are talking about development in the whole world. So thank you very much for your attention, and we'll continue to invite you anytime you want to have some kind of frank discussions on issues like this. And finally, the regional economic communities, it's been quite rewarding to have you here. We've listened to you and the practical dimensions you've looked into how we contribute into the finalization of Agenda 2063 and how we intend to really contribute to its implementation are quite good. And we'll continue to, again, come over to you, listen to you on some of these things we'll be doing. Well, before the final one, just to let you know that because of the time constraint we have here, the press briefing has been cancelled, and we'll just move straight after the final word from His Excellency to the briefing, UNDP briefing with the Rex in Conference Room 9, just the other side of this building. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that we have reached a very productive end to our very productive meeting. I thank you all for participating, and I thank most particularly the representatives of the regional economic communities. Please join me in giving them another round of applause. I think it has been a very rewarding experience. I would like also to thank our colleagues in the Department of Public Information for all their efforts in publicizing this event and making it at this kind, at this level of participation, and for supporting us with all the material. I think we are as partners in many other mandates that we always continue and stick together. And I thank my colleagues who came from other departments at the high level to participate in this debate, and to continue the debate, come to the next Africa Week. Starting on the 13th of October, Monday, we will continue with the same subject until we reach a final conclusion. Thank you, and have a wonderful afternoon.